other. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We've got a well-known sports writer joining us in about 2 hours who just got involved in mainline politics and was tracked and traced by Homeland Security, the state police. I want to give you an idea of just how rogue, just how classically out of control, wicked the government is today. With the guest, we'll tell you about him a little bit later. Also, we have Professor Stephen Jones of physics joining us along with David Ray Griffin together. Thought that'd be interesting to have the two on together. Coming up in the fourth hour today, I was originally going to have them both on because I was going to have a TV channel here, the folks from National Geographic, but I decided not to do it because I learned the type of programs the producers made are just so one-sided. There's no point to even be part of it, so because they're being interviewed as well. And so I thought it would be a nice tie-in, but we're not doing that. I think they're still being interviewed by them. But they are coming up in the fourth hour today. A lot of important news we'll be covering in the meantime, and open phones. The toll-free number to join us on air on any issue you wish to discuss, any news item, the economy, Barack Hussein Obama, the way he is, well, saying that it's official, they're going to have Hillary Clinton as the Secretary of State, Bush Clinton, on and on forever. And he's appointing, again, all these other New World Order insiders. So things are going to get even worse. If you didn't think that was possible, hold on to your seat because it is going to get more serious. I'm actually getting a lot of Obama minions who were hoping for something new, who hated Bush so much and didn't realize that he was a total puppet, and didn't realize that Obama would be a puppet. I am getting emails and calls and quite a few comments on the message board up on PrisonPlanet.com, as well as in the stories on InfoWars.com and PrisonPlanet.com, people saying, yeah, you were right. My gosh, he really has completely betrayed the people. Well, of course. I mean, he said 9-10 months ago he was against the war. Now he's saying we'll be there at least 3 more years. That's the Bush doctrine. Warrantless wiretapping of the American people, that continues. Torture. All the policies, except a few new ones that Bush did sign on to in the last 2 years. Carbon taxes, regulating every facet of your life. More gun control, more amnesty, more open borders. More taxes. And at this point, I mean, I'm not for raising taxes to, quote, pay down the deficit, because there's no putting Humpty Dumpty back together again. The currency will be devalued. There is no putting the dollar back together again. Taxes are only to squeeze the economy into oblivion that much faster so it can be vertically integrated, consolidated by the multinational banks. So taxes are only used as a weapon when you have an economy this irrevocably bankrupt and unsalvageable to brutalize the middle class. And by middle class, I mean people making $100,000 a year up to $50 million a year. That is the lower middle class up to the nouveau riche. I know the poor blue-collar folks have been taught by Hollywood and TV that somebody making $80,000 a year is rich. That is not the case. These are economies of scale. I mean, there are thousands of billionaires, ladies and gentlemen. They're just good at hiding their assets. There are just untold masses of millionaires. And it ain't what it used to be, as they say. So I want to take a lot of calls today at 1-800-259-9231. Got a lot of interesting news. Some of it is very encouraging. We will talk about it all on the other side. Some amazing medical breakthroughs. Stay with us.
Big break. another. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Zach, Igor, Tony, Ted, Chris, I'm going to you in this segment. Wide open phones today. I got a lot of important audio clips I want to play and break down. Professor Stephen Jones and David Ray Griffin join us later. And we also, again, have a very well-known sports commentator. David Zurin will be joining us as well, coming up in T-minus 1 hour and 51 minutes. We're going to have open phones up until then and cover the news. In economic developments, U.S. home construction sinks to new record low. Construction of U.S. homes falls 4.5% to new record low in October as builders cut back. Construction of new homes plunged 4.5% last month to the lowest level on government records dating back to 1959 as U.S. builders slashed production while Wall Street nosedived. Building permits, a barometer for future activity, also plummeted to a new record low pace. The embattled housing industry, which enjoyed a five-year boom, is now on pace to construct the fewest new homes and apartments since the end of World War II. Also, charts predict Dow Jones Industrial Average to hit 6,400 in less than a month. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is set to sink to 6,400 within the next few weeks. Nicole Elliott, technical analyst for Muzo Corporate Bank, told CNBC, any moment now, I think we're going to break lower, Elliott told Europe Tonight. I think this is to be possible before the end of November or very early December. I mean, we're almost on our way now, and it's just a question of how far down do we go, she said. In other financial news, I watched clips last night of the three or four hour testimony of Henry Paulson, the guy running the Treasury Department, the Goldman Sachs crime boss, and the private Fed head, Ben Bernanke. And he arrogantly chastised Congress. Every time he would speak, or Bernanke would speak, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, CNBC would put him on. Every time Ron Paul or others on the banking committee in the House would hammer them, they would just cut away. So you had to go up to the C-SPAN website or the C-SPAN channels to watch it. Just another example. I mean, these big banks and brokerage firms, they own the controlling stock in those TV networks, and they're not going to let you know what's going on. By the way, I've seen scores of news articles as they get the public ready to go after the pension funds and as they prepare the public to have their 401ks taken. And you know, I tell people this on the street. I was in a restaurant last night, and there were some nice folks talking to me, but some other people were kind of laughing at me. And as I was picking food up at the bar for like 10 minutes, you know, waiting there, and I just said, well, what is it I've said that hasn't happened? Well, I mean, what's funny? What's funny about all of this? I mean, it's not funny. And having your pension funds taken isn't funny. But we're a nation of arrogant know-it-alls, and the average individual is so arrogant that they can't even imagine bad things happening to them. And let me tell you, it's going to be that much worse when people find out what's been done to them. I mean, you think people are mad now about $5 trillion stolen in 5 weeks by the private banks? Just imagine. But watching Paulson warns TARP isn't panacea for economy's ills. And it goes on in Bloomberg to talk about how he chastised the Congress like they were bad. Truly disgusting. Obama pushes carbon tax proposal that would inflict a new Great Depression. He had a big speech out in California last night about how they're going to bankrupt this and bankrupt that. Oh, that's really going to help you, America. Let me explain something to people out there who are posting on the PrisonPlanet.com story that Paul Watson wrote, going, you idiots, you don't understand the true vision of Obama. You don't understand how this is going to energize a new green revolution and a new 21st century economy. On and on and on. Even if they came out with super technologies today, getting them to market, bringing them to 300 million Americans, that conversion would take conservatively 5 years. And, you know, we're seeing other technological conversions, the death of the newspapers, the massive contraction of TV news, not just because they're a pack of lying criminals that no one trusts, but also because people are tuning out. They're tuning into the web. But we see the establishment moving to block alternative news, blogging to regulate, tax, and control the web. So that fight is now shaking up. We'll see how that unfolds as that shapes up. But I digress. The point here is, have you read the international agreement to know-it-alls? Have you read what the IMF and World Bank, International Bank of Settlements, the OECD, have you read what the Club of Rome and Trilateral Commission and CFR are saying this is for? I mean, we write articles and link to their statements. Paul Watson's done that in this article. But do you even read the article? No. Do you even read the links? No. They say it's about destroying the middle class and vertical integration. They say it's about freezing growth of the economy and development to control you. Because if technology continues to expand, they are going to lose their monopolies. And you are going to have a revolution of technology and energy and information. You understand that this system, it will move what's left of our industry, about 20% of what we had in the 70s, the early 70s, 20% is left. That will move to China and India and Mexico and the 160-plus other countries, where there are no carbon caps, and there's no discussion of them ever having it. You understand the big banks own and control the big slave factories overseas? So it's just a cold-blooded mercantile move to shut down industry here in the United States, in Canada, New Zealand, Australia, England, Western Europe. I mean, do you understand that? You understand that? You understand that? You understand that even if you believe carbon dioxide is a deadly poison, and that methane is horrible and evil and all the rest of it, do you understand that it will only move it to third world nations and that it will boost the amount? I mean, the level of wanton ignorance. But hey, you know what? Go ahead, parade around, put Obama stickers on your car, call for this, and just enjoy. And ask yourself if you're better in 4 or 5 years than you were today. But it won't matter. A lot of you don't even care if you become homeless. You just he'll be on TV telling you he loves you and, you know, it's sacrifices we've got to make. Getting everybody ready for this. All right, I said I'd go to your calls. I'm digressing here. Just Obama pushes carbon tax proposal. SEC persecutes Mark Cuban for relationship with loose change. I said on this show yesterday afternoon, the end of the show, that there was a good chance this was persecution for Mark Cuban's involvement with Loose Change Final Cut, the owner of the Mavericks, the guy that sold a bunch of stuff to Yahoo for $3 billion. I'll talk about that later. I want to go to some calls first, but the New York Times is now saying it looks like that's what it is. So now I have to reassess things. Maybe it isn't for, you know, the New York Times is agreeing with me, then it must not be true. But they do point out, though, if you read the article, the investigation started the month after Bill O'Reilly and Sean Hannity and others said, we're going to get you, Cuban, we're going to get you, Sheen, we're going to ruin you, you better not do this. And I know that Charlie Sheen was threatened in ways, if I told you, you wouldn't even believe it, but you saw what was put out in the media, that was only part of it. Producers, separate people in Hollywood, were told, you're just out of the blue, the... You know, somebody's sister's husband calls up who's a general in the Air Force and says, don't be involved, this is a true story, in this movie or they will kill your children. And then that was before O'Reilly heard about it and was even on the news. That's when it was secret. So that's why that never happened. Cuban actually pulled out of it. But it doesn't matter. This SEC lawyer emailed him and said, you know, here I am. I'm going to report you. We're going to get you. And they did get him. And so I'm being sarcastic about not believing the New York Times thing. I mean, that is what's going on. And you know, I'm committed to be put in prison if they do it. I mean, for some trumped up charge, I'm committed to go ahead and, you know, let that happen. I'm committed to be killed or set up or demonized or attacked or gunned down. I mean, I don't want those things to happen, but I'm in a position that really nobody else in the, quote, alternative media or patriot movement is. I mean, I am the big kahuna. And the sad part about all of this is that, I mean, I'm doing this truly from altruistic aims. I really know this is a very special journey. It's like Dennis Kucinich said months ago on the show. He said, I don't care if they threaten me. I don't care what happens to me. This is now a spiritual thing. By the way, magically, his brother and sister have both died in the last 4 months. Very interesting. They're pretty young. They're younger than him, magically dying. But side issue, the point is that's why I wish that other people in this movement would spend more time fighting the New World Order instead of obsessing about Alex Jones and my celebrity that is exponentially growing, because it's a liability for me. I don't like it. But I do also see it as a mark of success in getting the word out. But you have to understand, it's a dangerous thing. It's a very dark thing. It's not a, you know, it's a racing on the edge of the abyss, running with the devil, whatever you want to call it. I mean, you should realize that all of us are in danger, and especially myself. And people should really get their heads screwed on straight and reassess this, because you have no idea the type of persecution we go through to bring you this.
I wish a buck was still silver. It was back when the country was strong.
Yeah, you got to be scared of the dumbed-down public, because as the bankers implode and consolidate the economy, the public is going to whine and scream, I predict, instead of getting angry. And say, we'll do whatever you say. We'll attack whatever country you say. We'll give up all our rights. We'll rat out our neighbors. We'll take jobs stealing our neighbors' houses. Just give us money. Give us cheeseburgers. Give us stylishness. And a lot of them will go along with it. So we're headed into very serious times. But good folks are going to be listened to more than ever. And we're going to be able to rally a lot of people against the New World Order as this unfolds. Okay, let's go to your calls. Zach in Maine, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Yes, Mr. Jones.
Hi.
I just want to say it's a great honor to be in the air with you. I'm a regular listener. I have been after this past summer. I made a decision not to listen to Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh. I have a job that allows me to ride on a lawnmower all day, and I have my headphones on, and I just got sick of listening to the same old garbage, and so I decided to buy some forbidden fruit and got one of those iPods, and I've been listening to your podcast regularly and sharing it with the guys at work. I subscribed to your Prison Planet TV, got some videos, sharing it with my family.
Good.
And I just want to give a shout-out and say hi to the NSA, anybody else who's listening. I know you're listening, and we know you're a bunch of criminals. I am in the National Guard. I took an oath to defend the Constitution, the people of Maine, the people of this country, and I'm going to stick to that. And my weapon is the First Amendment, and I will continue to speak out against all these injustices. And,
First
and
Amendment's bad. That's the one. Hold on. Osama bin Laden wrote that First Amendment.
Osama bin Laden. Hey, listen, since you got a 9/11 show coming today, you know, was it Stephen Jones is on the air?
Yes.
I brought up Glenn Beck and something that just disgusts me that I heard on the air a couple of years ago. People called in to his show and were talking about the explosions that they heard before the towers went down. And what Glenn Beck said, what an idiot, he said that it was people jumping from the building sounding like explosions. Well, yeah, people did jump from the buildings, but there's a difference between, you know, a body smacking the pavement, which I'm sure from however many stories up, it's going to sound pretty loud. It's not going to be the sound of an explosion, you know, like a grenade. I've heard grenades, and it wouldn't be a body smacking
the
pavement.
Well, the police are saying, get back. They're bringing it down. They're bringing it down, and the owner said they blew it up. And then there's all the witnesses and the countdown and the rest of it. But the key here is Glenn Beck will come on the air and say they're setting up a one-world government. The bankers are taking over. But he does that only after they finally announce it on the news. Then he will talk about it.
Yeah.
Or he will talk about the Treaty of the Sea, you know, Law of the Sea Treaty.
Yeah.
Or the Department of Peace, you know, that Obama wants to set up. It's really a Department of Disarming the People and actually waging more wars against innocent individuals. The Department of Peace is about disarming.
He might have half-truths, but the people are seeing through the lies more and more.
Well, I was about to say that what Glenn Beck does is that he will tell a lot of things that are true, but then mix in lies and say, we need to go ahead and arrest 9/11 truthers.
Yep.
We need to go ahead and use the military. Remember, he said, use the military on 9/11 truthers, and then 5-6 months later came out and said, oh my gosh, they want to use the military against the American people.
I can tell you, I am a member of the military, and I'm not going along with it. I'm not. I refuse. I stick by. I will not obey any unlawful orders, and we see it through the garbage. And unfortunately, a segue into Obama and global warming and the rest, I had a buddy of mine, you know, who's right in with me in the guard on 9/11 being an inside job. He's had another buddy on the air that's a member of a college radio station and says stuff when he can about it. But as soon as Obama got elected, he's like, oh man, things are going to change. So I still got to work on him and getting him to see through the picture completely. And another thing, I'm sorry, I don't want to take up all your time, your listeners' time, but I just attended a concert recently at UMaine, an OAR concert.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about it is it was part of a campus, a global consciousness core on global warming, and they had all this stuff. You can buy stickers to offset your carbon footprint, and who's getting the money? It seems to me that this global warming thing is exactly what you've been preaching on the bailout. You know, Congress is drilling Kashkari and
it's like an indulgence. It's like an indulgence. You know, 500 years ago, you'd buy from the Catholic Church. If you cheated on your wife, you'd go, you know, buy some indulgences. It's a total fraud. And again, it's a tax, but they train you for taxes first with you voluntarily going out and paying the tax. Yeah, that's just what we need, folks. More taxes. Good to hear from you, my friend. Good to have you on board, Zach. Igor, Tony, Ted, Chris, everybody else. Your calls straight ahead. Wide open phones, a ton of news, and then a whole bunch of big guests today.
I read the news today, oh boy. About a lucky man who made the grade. And though the news was rather sad, well, I just had to laugh.
A big part of the problem we face,
I saw the photograph,
is that if you study corruption in any society in any time,
he blew his mind out in a car.
Once governments, once companies, once institutions get a culture of corruption, once corruption sets in, even the smallest corruption, then you accept a little bit more. Until you've got all sorts of criminals. You've got people in government that are doing bid rigging and contract scams and all sorts of fraud and double billing, you know, just classic things. But then it becomes, you know, stealing people's houses, being an IRS auditor who makes up stuff, or being a federal prosecutor. I mean, federal courts openly operate where they'll bring in informants that you've never seen, never talked to, who testify in hundreds of trials a year. The judge, everybody knows it's a lie. The jury are like little children from the general public. They don't know. And they'll bring up 5, 6, 10, 15, 20, you know, fake people, never met you, and they'll just say, I swear I saw him dealing cocaine. I swear I saw him laundering money. That's like crime labs. every major crime lab in the country that I've ever looked at. I mean, I see three or four articles a week about Boston and Houston and Dallas and L.A. and El Paso and just, I mean, any town you can imagine, any city of over 100,000 people, because they so sloppily do it, and they'll put thousands of people per town behind bars over the years with just totally made-up crime labs, made-up witnesses, that they run into people that end up being able to get witnesses and document it, and then, because there are still some good cops, they'll blow the whistle, and then you'll hear, okay, they framed in 1 year 4,000-plus people in Houston, and they just falsified all the evidence, but that's just what they do, and nobody's getting in trouble. Or, oh, the FBI crime lab, you know, we've had a bunch of people that work there, including the head of the forensics department, come out, Frederick Whitehurst, and say that it was industrialized fraud, just open fraud, not even hidden. They didn't even sneak around about it. It was just, okay, let's go frame everybody today. I mean, that's your government. Totally bankrupt, totally criminal. At the top. And they're busy kicking all the good people out, and then not even just kicking out good people, they're brainwashing people. There's a lot of people who aren't inherently evil. They're just really shallow. They're not very smart, or if they are smart, they're so mesmerized in TV and culture that they're not paying attention. And so they're told, hey, we frame people. Hey, we torture people. Hey, we do this and that. And it's just like, okay, well, you know, I've been given a training manual. I'm an Army captain. It says I torture people. It says I stage fake terror attacks. That's how we win wars. This is just what we do. It's just collateral damage in a war. You know, we kill 3,000 so we can save millions from Al-Qaeda attack. And that's the bankrupt mindset. That's the bankrupt system. Let's go to Igor in Virginia. Igor, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes.
How you doing, Alex? I'm a big fan of your show for 2 years now. I'm 22 years old. I came from Ukraine 11 years ago. Love this country. I like what Ron Paul was saying. You know, we need to stand up to the New World Order. And I voted for Chuck Baldwin and got my citizenship not too long ago.
Good.
I thought you were nuts at first when I started listening to you, but since I started listening to you, I started researching and started, like, you know, reading all these books about the Bilderbergers, New World Order, and I understood what's going on. Please don't stop talking about this, man. Like I really see you, like, you're a legend, man. I tell everybody about you, and the most important thing is we need to ask questions, demand the answers to our problems. Obama's not... You know, he's not talking about any sort of change. It's just words. It's rhetoric. He's, he's lining himself with the same people that have been there for generations now.
Well, let me say this. I'll tell you who legend is. People don't need to build me up as some superhuman, as some special person. I'm just somebody who's aggressive, and I'm not going to be a slave. And so
absolutely.
I've taken publicly available information and aggressively told the people that they have power historically and that they are an unstoppable force when they simply set their mind in motion into action. So I'll tell you, I'll tell you who the legend is, Igor, it's you.
Absolutely.
The legend is
people
like Zach before you.
Yes.
The legend is the single mom busting her butt to raise children to not end up in the prison system. The legend is the firefighter that goes into a burning house to save children and the floor caves in and he dies or she dies. The legend is the people that broke their backs throughout history to stand up against tyranny, people like Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And that's who we need to respect and appreciate. And look, on the surface, I do have courage. But that's a mind trick. Okay, I am able to intellectually understand that there's greater danger not fighting this to my progeny. And my progeny come first, and we're all connected, we're all genetically related, everybody is my family. And so that is why, as a male, it isn't something special. Males are meant, when their cave is attacked, when there's a threat, to stand up and fight it. And so I'm doing what I was made to do. And the power is people like you spreading the word about the radio show, about the websites, and God bless you. Igor, go ahead and finish up.
Absolutely, sir. You're absolutely right. We all are legends. What I meant by when I said legend, I meant like that you broke, like, you know, you woke me up to what was going on, because I've been listening to all these idiots, you know. I'm sorry, not idiots, but like, you know, all these people on the air and, you know, just spreading garbage, you know, and all these people are brainwashed. We're like zombies now. Anyway, my question is, sir, what do you see happening in the next 2 years with this Obama administration? Because, you know, the first 100 days is critical, and the first 2 years is when the Democrats have full power. And how long do you think it will take people to realize that Obama's a fraud? And when do you see the war in Iran starting and other wars expanding? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Igor. Good to hear from you. What will Obama do? That's question number one. Number two, when will people see through him? When will they see through him? And the other one is, will they attack Iran or when? When Iran. And what I'll do is, next hour, I will answer those questions, because I keep meaning to really get into what Obama's saying he's going to do publicly versus who he's hiring, what his policies are. I'll go over that. And then when I think people will wake up to him. That'll be when the media finally stops saying he's the Christ, the second coming, and then when they give you a new puppet to believe in. But we'll get more into that coming up later after I talk to Tony, Ted, Chris, Tulia, and others. But for the next 10 minutes or so, he joins us once a month. He's a sponsor of the show. I've been here, I don't know, like 3 years with us now. He's been with Genesis for about 5-6. And he never sold to the public until Michael Trudeau, the sales manager at Genesis, who is into True Organics. He's a conservative, but he's into organics. Why have your kids bathe in poison? Found out about what hospitals and finer hotels were buying and saving money. It's funny, you get better quality and save money if you know what to do. The public buys the toxic chemicals, the byproducts after World War II. They figured out how to take the toxic waste and put it into your, what they call shampoos and soaps and cleaners. The toxic detergents, the byproducts of petrochemical. And, well, Marty's just got old-fashioned soap. And he and his dad, back in 47, when he got back from World War II, Marty in the Chemical Corps, so he knew what chemical weapons were. That's why he freaked out when he read a box of soap, found out it wasn't. They went back and made the old-fashioned stuff with citrus and vegetables and, you know, cherry oil essence and oranges and all of that. And you save 85% off supermarket prices. And I know a lot of people now use Calbin Pure Soap. I'll be at friends' houses and see it on the, you know, above the sink, or I'll be at my aunt and uncle's and see it, you know, in their shower. And so I know a lot of people out there are now using it, and that's very exciting, and we're glad that folks are doing that. Marty, good to have you here with us.
Hey, Alex, a pleasure again to talk to you and your listeners. Try to bring them up to date.
Marty, I'm hearing a disconnect line. I think you may have a line on your phone system that's disconnected. I'm not sure if that's going out over air, though.
No, everything seems to be clear. Your voice is coming through beautifully.
Okay, fantastic. It's gone now. Marty, let's, again, I know we basically tell the same story, but slightly, you know, different areas of it each time. It's such a big story. But I think the most important thing here today is, well, I mean, you can talk about whatever you want in the time we have, but what is in real soap that you make versus what we're using at the stores?
We try to make soap from all natural substances. We use coconut oils. We use vegetable oils. We use fruital juices like orange juice and cherry juice and honey. All these additives to repel the perfumes that are toxic in all the products. You don't need a respirator when you use our products. You do need one when you go to the supermarket, and one-third of that market has cleaning chemicals in it, and it makes it difficult to breathe. Perfumes are not good for human consumption, human use, or human smell. They're just there to doctor up the detergents that are made from waste petroleum. They're real dark chemicals. They bleach them out to make them white. They pour sodium chloride in it, which is table salt, to make it free-flowing, and to kill the bad petroleum odors, they use perfumes saturating the products so you can't recognize the foul petroleums that are in the products. And what we do is the old-fashioned methods of making the products, dissolving the oils, putting in the coconut oils and the vegetable oils, compressing them, and making products that don't exist in the United States today. I'm not sure about Europe. I know we're shipping goods right now to Hong Kong, China, because they have nothing like that, and we ship tons of our pure soaps to Hong Kong every month to two big health food stores that distribute our products there, and they love it. And we've been doing that for 3 years, and we've been with you for over 3 years, and we love it.
Marty, tell folks about your line of real soaps.
Okay, we're talking about if you wanted to get into bulk packaging of real soap, you can get direct from factory, which is us, a 1 to 2 year supply, which is weighed out about 65 pounds, is equal to 1,000 pounds of chemicals of the supermarket for $3 a week. You can get a 3 to 4 year supply, 145 pounds, which is equal to 2,000 pounds, a ton, 250 per week. A 4 to 5 year supply, we're talking 210 pounds for shipping. That's equal to supermarket chemicals, 3,000 pounds, over a ton and a half. That's $2 per week. What does it cost you now to buy these chemicals in the marketplace? And I got what would you call as a public service announcement. If you're using and buying from the market toothpaste, mouthwash, Lysol, antibacterials, all-purpose cleaners, oven cleaners, shampoos, etc., let me give you the Poison Control Center number, 800-222-1222. I'll repeat that again. To call the Poison Control Center using all these chemicals, 800-222-1222. That'll help you. Keep it on your refrigerator. Keep it in your kitchen. Keep it in your bathroom. You never know when you're going to need it. Those stuff that, the chemicals that are made from Procter & Gamble. And I just found out that Procter & Gamble is outsourcing their manufacturing to China.
Oh, absolutely. Procter & Gamble was bought by a European company, by Gillette. And then if you expand out from there, most of our pharmaceuticals, I know it's more than 80%, are now made in China because they can put anything they want in there. And so it is just a complete and total crisis that we're facing. Again, Marty, tell folks how they call and how they get. You also have a tote bag, a sampler.
Well, not only do we have the bulk packages to save you literally a small fortune of what it's costing you now, you can also buy the individual products as you need them, as you like them. When you go to the supermarket and there's nothing priced anymore, there's a price, there's no prices on anything. There's barcodes, and you got to go to the checkout counter to figure out what you just bought. We give you a price schedule on everything, breaking down per item, per bulk, per savings. We do that. We have been doing that since 1947, 61 years of our company going down the drain. And our guarantee is our satisfaction guaranteed or double your dirt back.
Nope. Marty, you're something else.
Anyway, we make the products. We've got the products. You can reach us 1-800-340-7091. That's 1-800-340-7091. You'll talk to me. You'll talk to my son. You'll talk to my daughter. We're a family company. We are not a corporation. We take care of you personally. We feel that you are very valuable to keep clean, to keep healthy, to keep economically stable. We do that.
Let me give folks the website. It's 5starsoap.com, or you can spell out 5starsoap.com. 5starsoap.com. We have banners up on Infowars.com and JonesReport.com. If you forget the address, 5starsoap.com. But give out that number, Marty.
800-340-7091. You not only can get the bulk packages, you not only can get individual packages, you think, well, this is too good to be true. I don't know if I'm going to like this. I never heard of that company before. You know, we're the world's best-kept secret. Nobody knows about us. That's why we're talking to you through Alex, so that we can give you information that's honest and true and safe. And this is what we do, and you can reach us through our website, which has all the information, our toll-free number. You'll talk to us directly. We ship it direct from our factory in Oakland, California, direct to your door. We don't care where you are. We use United Parcel all over the world.
5starsoap.com. Give them the number one more time, Marty.
800-340-7091. You can get a miniaturized sampler of our package for $20 plus shipping, which will give you a very good taste for a 4 to 8 week supply, so you will take care of your reluctance. Try it before you buy it.
Absolutely. Don't procrastinate, folks, because this really is a good deal. I really do believe in it. All the sponsors I endorse, I really do believe in and think are great, and this is one of the best offers that we bring you, the listeners, here, and it makes everything we do here possible. Marty from 5starsub.com, the Cal Ben Pierce Sub Company out in Oakland, California, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Get ready for your limerick for today.
Give it to us fast.
There was a young fellow named Sidney who drank till he ruined his kidney. It shriveled and shrank as he sat there.
Hold on. Stay
drank.
There. We got to finish it.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up.
Marty is something else, folks.
Stand up for your right.
I wanted to hold him over to finish his limerick. It's bad luck not to finish it, and he hung up. And I got callers calling in. Doug in Tennessee, a Cal Ben testimonial. He'll turn into a huge testimonial to people how much they love it. I got all this news I need to cover. And some of it's really good news, like they are successfully growing organs and now implanting them in people. And people are doing it with their own tissue. They're not having to kill a baby to do it. You know, going back a few years ago, there was this big debate about, well, should we use, you know, the tissue of aborted babies? And they call that stem cell. But there's some other tissues that are also stem cell, like placenta and other things associated with the birth. But they were trying to cloud the issue in the media to set the precedent to have these half-human, half-animal chimeras so they could do different genetic experiments and set that precedent. But, of course, then it came out that there are a lot of other tissues that are stem cells in our own bodies that work just as good or better, and we don't have to kill a baby to do it. So, very interesting news on that front, and I also want to go to Tony and Ted and Chris and Tulia, many others that are patiently holding. But yeah, Marty, we've got to hold you over here because we can't not finish the limerick on air. Go ahead.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Let's start again. This is a very old one. There was a young fellow named Sidney who drank till he ruined his kidney. It shriveled and shrank as he sat there and drank, but he had a good time doing it, didn't he?
Hey, Marty, Doug, and then we'll have 100 more of these later. Please, folks, don't call with testimonials. We appreciate it, but once we start with one, we'll definitely get more. It'll be like Dave and Joyce's show. But Doug in Tennessee says he has a Cal Ben testimonial. Go ahead, Doug. Tell us about it.
Hey, Alex, I used to shave with Edge Gel. And one day I read the chemical list on the back and decided, you know, I didn't want to do this. And I thought, you know, this Cal Ben soap is pretty slippery. Maybe I should try that. And I just lathered it up on my face, and it was actually, I got a better shave with that than with the chemical Edge Gel, and I really like it.
You want to know a story? I do the same thing with Cal Ben bar soap. Again, they figured out how to sell you a million products. You don't need shaving cream. You don't need all these little side items. Real soaps you can use for a whole host of issues. And I've noticed, since I only use organic deodorant, organic products, Cal Ben's mixed into all that, you know, I don't have the rashes. I don't get the dry skin in the winter. This stuff is deadly poison. So if you're not going to use Cal Ben, use some other organic stuff. It's just, for some reason, it always costs more than the chemical stuff. And Cal Ben, because it's factory direct, costs less than the factory stuff. But thank you for that testimonial. Marty, I bet you get a lot of those.
Yes, endlessly. People phoning, people sending emails, people sending faxes. It sometimes it swamps us down, the appreciation that we get and the compliments we get. And I'm talking about a heavy, heavy communication, which we appreciate very much, more than we've ever gotten since we've been in business all these years. We finally hit the nerve of the consumer that we got something for them.
Well, you finally hit an audience that isn't completely brain dead.
Exactly.
I mean, you tell the general public that's drinking fluoride and taking Prozac and drinking Jack Daniels every night and watching, you know, football every day. I mean, you try to tell them, hey, you don't want to pay a whole bunch more money for toxic waste. They just, you know, basically say you're from Planet X and laugh at you. Marty, good to hear from you.
Thank you, Alex. I appreciate this very much.
You bet. Take care, my friend. What a character. Ended up doing two segments with him. All right, folks, we're going to come back and get to all your calls. And then we got a well-known sports writer joining us coming up.
Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We have the White House press secretary again saying that the U.S. government has never tortured. But then they go on to direct the press to government documents where they say that waterboarding, other forms of torture are not torture. Kind of like taking your pension fund isn't going to be taking your pension fund. It's going to be protecting your pension fund. All right, let's get through calls. I want to take a lot of calls again in this hour. We do have quite a few audio clips coming up. David Zirin, well-known sports reporter, also mixes politics into what he does. He got tracked by the government for being involved just in a mainline Democratic Party activity. So we'll have you have a chance to hear him tell that story coming up in the next hour. And then Dr. Stephen Jones and David Ray Griffin on the 9/11 front in the fourth hour today. But let's go ahead and go back to the calls. Let's go ahead and talk to, I guess, Chris in Arkansas is up next, and then Tulia. Go ahead, Chris.
Alex, just want to thank you very much for all you have done and been listening to you since 1999. All you've said has either come true or has been true, and most of it I didn't believe at first, but I did my own research, my own reading, and I was actually shocked to find out how many ways and how far and how much we were under attack and just devastated me. I've been told by quite a few people that don't believe me. People think I'm crazy. But, you know, in the military, we took an oath to defend against both foreign and domestic enemies, so I'm kind of committed to this. My questions for you is there's a lot of people out here who are, they're lucky to make any kind of money during the week, and they're trying to store up for the things that you recommend. You know, they can't invest in gold. They're lucky if they can pay for food as the week goes. Do you have any recommendations for those people? And then I have a second question if you want to answer that one first.
Well, I mean, I'm no genius. Everybody understands their local environment, you know, better than somebody off in Austin, Texas does. But stop eating out. Make food themselves while they still can, sell all the junk they've got in the garage. Even people that don't have a lot of extra income a lot of times have more stuff than they think they do. Sell it on eBay. If they don't have a computer, you know, sell it at the local swap meet. And then just realize that the biggest issue is being able to feed themselves and take care of their family and not be stampeded by rioting crowds if society does totally break down. And that may happen. Undoubtedly, we're going to have a long, deep recession leading into a depression. The question is, how bad will it get? And every indicator is, You know, I keep asking the question of the audience, why do you think the elite doesn't care now and is just stealing $5 trillion in front of you and won't say where $2 trillion went and openly bringing in the military to police the American people? And it's because all the evidence is that they are going for broke. They wouldn't be emerging with the world government. They wouldn't be, you know, surfacing and then showing everybody if they weren't going to go ahead and do it all. And so I would also tell people our mission is more than just protecting ourselves, to help others. And so I would also worry about other people, and then, you know, God has a way of taking care of people to do that. And so people need to not just get ready, not just hide out, but try to speak out and get the word out. Calling talk radio, putting out flyers, emailing people links to video clips on the web, you know, whatever you can to wake people up, talking to folks at your church. And we may be able to back this thing off. So stay there. We'll come back to you, see if you have any other comments to that. When we get back with Chris in Arkansas, then we'll talk to Tulia, Brad, Paul, and others. Stay with me.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
Let's go back to your phone calls. Chris in Arkansas, go ahead.
Alex, the other thing, I moved from Austin to Little Rock, and I kind of feel like I'm in the hotbed of where a lot of these things have originated, so I'm kind of amazed. But now I'm kind of wondering about if the bankers, the power brokers, are intentionally hoping that someone will start some trouble somewhere so that they can implement martial law, and then just kill the United States in that way through anarchy, or just as the continuance of government goes, and what your comments would be on that, and I'll take it off the air.
Okay, I appreciate your call. No, that's it. I mean, if the public acquiesces and just lets them take the pension funds and bankrupt everything, and then basically all businesses will get government funds to pay their employees at subsistence level, and will all be micromanaged, and the bankers will turn the money spigots back on for a while, kind of inebriate us while they dine on our hindquarters. But absolutely. I mean, that's why they're training every local police department in the nation. The feds are for IEDs, roadside, improvised explosive devices. They are, literally running around all paranoid, like there's just terrorists everywhere, and it's the American people, and it's white Al-Qaeda, and they're going to get you. Because the social planners, the social engineers have admittedly done big war games on how far they can push the public, when the public's going to start striking back. Last weekend, the Associated Press had a big article with Homeland Security saying, our main threat now isn't terrorists, it's the American people angry over the economy attacking government facilities. And they said, conversely, we're really worried about people mad at the government doing something during the 4 million Kool-Aid drinkers going to worship the new puppet, Barack Obama. So they're publicly converting the whole Homeland Security apparatus. It was always for us, and we always told people it was for us. That was in the white papers and government documents. But publicly, it was for shadow men in hiding in caves who always pop up at key election points or always pop up to second the CIA. All these Al-Qaeda guys are popping up with new videos and audio tapes. They're always put out by the very same intelligence agency fronts. Computer experts look at the videos. This is mainstream news. And, the Al-Qaeda watermark logo is laid in, with the Intel Center's watermark. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Yes, they are releasing the videos themselves. It's produced by the same people. Understand? I mean, it's just so cynical. Very, very cynical. You know, I'm going to go back to Tulia, Chris, Paul, Anthony here in just a moment, but we had a caller last hour who was asking about what will Obama do. Obama will do everything George Bush did. Because it's the same agenda. It's not George Bush's agenda or Barack Obama's agenda. It is the multinational Fortune 100 bought and paid for by the private banking families, less than 20 families. They are cold-blooded. They don't like people. They're eugenicists. They believe we're a scourge. They believe we all need to be killed anyways. So anything they do, they feel good about. And then you understand. They feel good about 3 million dead Iraqis. They feel good about dead Americans. That's job well done for them. They feel good about putting police chiefs in charge in crime labs nationwide who frame anybody they want, but then release hundreds of thousands per state, hundreds per thousands per year just in Houston alone, violent illegal aliens who have raped and murdered and stolen and molested children. That was all in the Houston Chronicle Monday. It's in there all the time. Citizens have got to be hurt. Citizens have got to be bankrupted. Citizens have got to be squeezed and taught who the boss is. We're the bad Americans. Everything was about setting a trap, getting us to trust government, getting us to be bleeding heart liberals, getting us on the government trough, getting control of our lives, turning our children against us, then getting us all in debt to the point where they could bankrupt the whole society, and then point the working class at the nouveau riche, at the upper middle class, and say, that's the rich, let's loot them, they cause the economy to have the problems. And then they're going to sick the blue collar, now in shiny, fancy uniforms, on the middle class, and they are going to rape you financially, and they are going to take everything you've got. They're going to take your pension funds, they're going to take your savings, they're going to turn a horde of blue-collar people loose on you, just like the Founding Fathers warned you, the howl of the mob, the mad howl of democracy. Now, there's no democracy in positioning this and setting this up, but then in the final equation, they turn the mob loose on the middle class. And they will slit your throat in the middle of the street for a dollar. And so that's what Barack Obama is going to do. He is going to be the messianic savior. The economy imploding is going to be blamed on Bush. He is going to give people government jobs, welfare. They're going to accelerate the currency. They're going to devalue it. They're going to give the devaluing currency to the public for Taco Bell tacos and 12 packs and cases of Bud Light. And they are going to turn them loose on you. I mean, it's not going to be pretty. That's what I'm really most concerned about. And already, I mean, it's all over the news. The left is suddenly, don't think Obama isn't tough. He's going into Pakistan and Iran if he needs to. And he's going into Afghanistan. And you know what? We're going to get tough with terrorists. We're going to take the gloves off. And people are like, man, maybe I like torture now. Maybe I like spying. You see, they teach you to hate Bush. The media lets you know about the torture and let you know about 9/11 and let you know about all of this. They let it out on the down low. As I told you on the day of 9/11, they were going to allow this out. Blame it on America. Have Henry Paulson come out and say, we're sorry the American government let you down, and we're sorry the American people were lazy and greedy. We're sorry, world. We will now pay. We will now devalue our currency and put the money into your coffers. Before it's devalued, it's our fault. See, the globalists didn't like the czar, so they slaughtered 60 million and did it in Russia. They didn't like the Chinese people. They'd thrown off the control by the colonial system, so they sent in the commies. And they killed 85 mil. You know, the news says 60 mil. The Chinese government says 80 mil. They're actually proud of it. Go pull it up. Go do research on it. Find out I'm telling you the truth. And see, they want to do that here. They want to show you who boss is. And they will turn the starving hordes loose on you. And if you run to other countries, they're going to do it there too. Anybody with money, unless you're living in Dubai or the Cook Islands or Switzerland, and then they're not going to let you in unless you got hundreds of millions. You're there to be thrown to the lions. And then Obama, like it's a gladiatorial arena, he's going to be up there laughing. They're going to love him. You understand? And they're going to bring in carbon taxes and tax and regulate everybody. But all the poor people standing at bus stops, they're not going to care. Because on the news, they're going to see people in million-dollar houses having their homes repossessed and, you know, handed over to local government people. It's bad, folks. I mean, the people that ran Lenin, the people that ran Hitler, the people that ran Mao, they're in control here, and they mean they want to hurt you bad. And I'm sorry if that's scary and people don't want to believe it, but that's one scenario. That's the most dangerous scenario. If the people rebel and resist and speak out and say no at every level, then what they're going to do is let Obama get a lot done for 2 years, get a carbon tax in, regulation, stage some terror attacks, start going after militias and claiming, you know, that they're in bed with white supremacists and that they wanted to, you know, they'll stage some racial crimes and have some hate speech laws passed, and they'll start shutting the web down, get more people on welfare. And then they'll have some scandals and burn Obama and you know, bring a Republican in 4 years. But I don't see that happening, because I've never seen them call somebody a messiah. I've never seen them set something up like this unless it was Mao or Hitler or Lenin. I mean, they are saying he is the one, Obama mania, president of the world, the man that will fix it all, the one. Let's go to your calls here. Tula in New Mexico, welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Alex, have you ever heard of someone named Lance von Liebensfeld?
I have. Refresh my memory.
He published a magazine. Well, to back it up a little bit, did you hear about what Obama had in his pocket the night he got elected?
No.
He had some trinkets, okay? And it came out on CNN the next day, and what it was a Hindu deity, a monkey. And if you go back to the works of Lance von Liebensfeld, who published a magazine in Germany predating the beginning of the Third Reich, he was a mentor of Adolf Hitler's, and he had a magazine called the Estara.
Yes, now I know who he is. Yeah, and he had a big New Age temple in Berlin.
Right, and he published a book called Of Sodom's Monkey, which really became the protocol for the Thule and Viral Society, but it was also the beginning of, not really the beginning of the Eugenic Society, because the Eugenic Society began in New England in 1927. My tribe, which I don't want to mention their name right now, we found all the paperwork on the Eugenic Society of the defective humans. But basically, Lance von Liebensfeld's whole thesis about Sodom's monkey, which is why Obama had it in his pocket. You know how they talk in codes?
Yeah.
They talk to each other in codes, and then they put all this other garbage, the big
stuff.
Well,
it's like, I think they call it a sigil. They, like, focus their energies on little idols. Like, all the Bohemian Grove members worship these owls in their houses. I tell you what, stay there. I want to hear more about the loving monkey.
Yes, we've been tragic on the wine press much too long. Rebel, rebel. Babylon system is the vampire. Yeah.
Well, I don't know about little magic trinkets in Obama's pocket. I know Hillary wears Kabbalah bracelets, and Madonna does, and all these Hollywood stars have got Kabbalic occultic stuff tattooed all over them, whatever. I mean, this is big. But I'll check into the Thule Society monkey. You know, CNN announcing, oh, he had something little and special in his pocket. And we've had Tex Mars to talk about how they, in buildings they build, you know, they put these little secret chambers in to put similar things in them. But I know his actions. He immediately got hundreds of millions of dollars that Bush, from political pressure, he had to do a few things, cut from the United Nations that was used in China for forced abortion. Now, the news uses the term coerced abortion. They kill the baby in front of you. I mean, they drown the babies in some cases. In others, they just fine you huge amounts of money and then take your child to be raised in a government facility. And people actually went on Infowars.com in the comment section and said, oh, you just don't like Obama, so what are they? Coerced is not forced. you know, just living in total denial about China. So I know he's doing that in China and in Africa, and the eugenics money is flowing. Now, to be technical, the article didn't get into that. See, it makes it partisan. Bush cut the funding one place, but then increased it in another. So what he did was a bait and switch, or you know, he just simply moved it. A shell game is the proper term. But I know that the real eugenic societies were set up in 1846 by Sir Francis Galton. And then, yeah, there were societies set up at the turn of the last century. And then through the 20s, Cold Springs Harbor, where it's the IBM Eugenics Human Genome Project today, and it's openly eugenics. They study their race-specific bioweapons. But you were making your point about do you remember the headline? Because I'll Google that right now. I want to look that up.
Well, it was on CNN in the news on the television, but basically it's a Hahnemann. And this Hahnemann, what I'm trying to explain, is a principle, an esoteric principle, of course, which connotates the defective humans. And with my tribe, when the Eugenics Society came up in this state in New England, they went down, they did a door-to-door statistical study of 250 families, which they called defective humans. And they had long hair, they wrote down, they had moccasins, they did beadwork, and then these families, 250 of them, disappeared.
I know, it's on CBC right now that they still go arrest the health department, the native children, and they just take them to a camp and kill them. And then I tell people that, I mean, that's on CBC. And then nothing happens. The government we're killing them, and that's the way it is. Well, George Bush Sr., as you know then, ran the eugenics operations in the 70s, and the government's own number, 44% of Native women were sterilized.
Yes.
And then people on reservations, and people laugh and email me going, oh, they conked him on the head? No, the health department came around with police and threw them in chains and took them like you take a wild animal carried out all sorts of things on them. But,
well,
we've
had 50 suicides since January, ranging from 6 years old to 18, hanging themselves with dog collars, and all these kids have cell phones. This is just on one reservation, 50.
Yeah, major.
We had a 6-year-old kid try to hang himself and was saved last week.
Yeah, it's mind control.
Yeah. I mean, we have been experiencing the New World Order, but to get back to what Berg was saying the other day about Barry, that George H.W. Bush is not a Bush. He was born in Germany. He was adopted by Prescott Bush. And I'm looking at a picture right here, which I would love to send you, because I don't think you've probably seen this. He was adopted, and I'm looking at a picture of him with Bormann as a 18-year-old young guy before he came to America, and Mengele, and the Scherf family. That's who he is. George H.W. Bush is not a Bush. He was adopted.
Well, I knew that Prescott was the head Nazi bagman in the United States. That's a fact. And I know... And Tex Mars doesn't make stuff up. He's confirmed. They have their own private church outside Houston. And it's big, baby blue background with a swastika inside. And that's their own private family church there. So I know the Skull and Bones is a Germanic death cult society at Yale. But send me that. Send that to Aaron at InfoWars.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
I tell you, man, our guests, we go over it and over it with them, and they just can't ever get time zones straight, which is fine with me. I don't care, but we're going to probably have Dave... Zirin on later in this hour and then early into the next hour instead of next hour, because he's calling us up thinking that he was supposed to be on 30 minutes ago. But c'est la vie, it doesn't even really matter. I want to go ahead and play this clip. This is himself on CNN. and he's talking about some of the things that happened to him. But first, the host explains to you in the piece on CNN that they're changing the Patriot Act administratively. Bush is. And it's all his fault. It's just because he's a Republican and because he's an evil white guy. To where they can spy on anybody and everybody domestically. The state police can with federal funds. That's actually what it states. Or the feds can. No warrants, no investigations, even non-terror related, non-crime related. And I covered this some last week. Non-crime related. And this has been on CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, and they say in Raw Story and all these other places, oh, Obama can't overturn it because Bush just did it, and something a president does 60 days, you know, becomes law with an executive order. No, it doesn't. Obama could overturn any of this, but everywhere is this PR that Obama fought the bailout, but it still happened. Obama fought the expansion of the Patriot Act, but Bush did it. Bush, he just keeps doing everything. And the public has no idea how government works. They have no idea. This is a ball-faced lie. So, see, they make it all about the evil right-winger. So I wanted to ask David Zirin, who's a great writer, sports writer, also political writer, but writes for The Nation, a bunch of other publications. I mean, are they going to be concerned about Barack Obama when all this stuff continues and expands under him? Or is it all just about George Bush? Because, see, I mean, I'm upset about the spying and the secret police. I understand the president's a puppet. See, I grew up a long time ago. And so I'm asking them, I mean, have you grown up, or is it all about the big, bad George Bush? And we'll just get George Bush pinatas out, and we'll hit on them. I mean, I'm saying Barack Obama's a puppet. And so people are going, what, are you for Obama? We need to focus in more on him. No, he's a puppet, too. The establishment doesn't want you knowing that they're puppets. They want to make it all about them instead of about who pulls their strings. So we'll play this clip, then go to your calls, and then we'll get Dave Zirin on. Here we go.
Before President Bush rides back to his ranch in Texas, he hopes to finalize over 90 new federal regulations. Now, in truth, finalizing regulations at the last minute is common practice among outgoing presidents, but the Bush administration is hoping to expand it and making their final regulation adjustments more permanent. Why stop now, after all? The president has accelerated the process to try to ensure that the changes he wants will be finalized by November 22nd. That's 60 days before the Obama administration takes control. That's dubiously convenient timing because most federal rules take effect 60 days after they've been finalized. So then they're harder to turn back. Here you go, President Obama. Good luck undoing this stuff. Get in the chopper, everybody, quick. So what do we have to look forward to from the Bush last days in the White House? You want one that'll kick opponents of the Patriot Act right in the teeth? How about law enforcement officials spying on us, all of us, everyone? Even if non-criminals not engaging in criminal activities are among us. Aunt Edna, you too. In July, the Justice Department proposed a regulation that would allow state and local law enforcement agencies to collect intelligence on individuals and organizations, even if the information is unrelated to any criminal matter. Think about that for a minute. Sure, go ahead, collect the intelligence. Doesn't have to have anything to do with a criminal investigation. President Bush, according to the Washington Independent, is keen on the idea. Even if they weren't already watching you, they soon could be, really easily. Joining us now, my friend, the sports writer Dave Zirin. He's sports correspondent with The Nation magazine. He got a little taste of this from the government earlier this year. Mr. Zirin, thanks for coming on.
Great to be here, Rachel. But I got to say, if your unpopularity is over 76%, you shouldn't be allowed to use the White House remote control at that point.
dramatically change the justice orientation of the country?
Hemorrhoids are more popular than this man. Why is he making laws? I'm very angry.
Well, he's doing it in a way that will make them hard to reverse.
That's right.
Now, Dave, I wanted you to be on the show tonight, because you went through an experience like this, what Bush is proposing for the whole country in Tacoma, Maryland. Now, what did you go through?
Well, the Maryland State Police sent people to infiltrate meetings I was in, a very seditious organization called the Campaign to End the Death Penalty, where we planned such horrifying acts like tabling at the local farmers market or planning rallies. I mean, constitutionally protected activities, the most basic kinds of things that I think sometimes we take for granted. And the horrible thing was that not only did they send people in to spy on us, to take notes on what we were doing, notes on what we were saying, but also, according to their own documents, they would come back in even after they determined that we weren't doing anything wrong. They were sent back in to spy on us. And it turned, why were they spying on us? Because the governor at the time, Bob Ehrlich, a right-wing Republican who makes Sarah Palin look like Emma Goldman, I mean, he was somebody who saw us as political opponents. He was for the death penalty. We were against the death penalty. Therefore, in his mind, we deserve to be spied upon.
And so he essentially used Homeland Security powers of the state government to go after you guys.
Yeah, we were sent. We were entered into a database, the heading of which was terrorist/anti-government. And anti-war activists were entered in a database that was called terrorist/anti-war. And then the person who organized all of this, the head of the Maryland State Police, a man by the name of Tim Hutchins, who was once named by your friend Keith one of the worst people in the world.
Yeah.
Tim Hutchins, he called us fringe people in the hearings. He said we deserved it because we were fringe people. So one of the things I want to ask is, who's the real fringe person here?
Yeah.
People who actually believe in the Constitution, or people like Tim Hutchins who use it like Kleenex?
Did any of the politicians, any of the people who were involved in this get in trouble for doing what they did? It was all exposed, ultimately.
It was all exposed, but here's the problem. To use a sports metaphor, the expose by former Attorney General Steve Sachs was the equivalent of driving 99 yards for a touchdown and then taking a knee. I mean, the report revealed every last bit of anti-constitutional behavior by the Maryland State Police, but then all of the recommendations were looking forward about future laws, future safeguards, and we believe people really need to be held into account for this. Bob Ehrlich, Tim Hutchins, I mean, we either have a constitution or we don't. Either our rights were violated or they weren't. And I mean, they're spying on sports writers here, Rachel. I mean, I ain't at Edda here. You know, I mean, I got my politics, but this is ridiculous.
Well, the prospect of this being expanded nationwide, essentially giving a Justice Department, federal government, green light to local and state law enforcement agencies to collect intelligence on anybody, regardless of criminal suspicion, which is what you went through, they're talking about expanding this nationwide. And what they will say in order to argue for it is, oh, what's the harm done to Dave Zirin? What's the harm done?
Here's the harm, because I'll quote Senator Ben Cardin from Maryland, because it has a chilling effect on the Constitution. It has a chilling effect on our ability to assemble. I mean, we have to remember that we're living in a time where 85% of the country thinks it's moving in the wrong direction. I mean, this is a time where we need to be welcoming new people into community activism, welcoming new people into struggle. And what you have instead is people looking at each other in Maryland as if, is that person an enemy? Is this person a plant? And it has a horrible effect right at a time where in the wake of the Obama victory.
And he joins us, and now we'll be taking your calls coming up in the next hour. Dave Zirin is our guest, and you can go up to Infowars.com and link over to his website if you'd like. His website is edgeofsports.com. Dave Zirin, it's good to have you on with us.
Hey, great to be here. Thank you.
Now, I was playing that news clip, but I think you really succinctly, in just a few minutes, broke it down, but I wanted to tell the host, this is already nationwide. I mean, they already have Army intelligence spying on people here in Austin, Texas. That's in our newspaper, in Houston, Texas. It's going on all over the country. In Denver, you know, cops were beating up other cops and blaming it on protesters. So,
yeah. No, that's actually a point that a lot of people emailed me after I was on that show. Was, I mean, very interesting thing, first of all, about talking about that. I mean, first of all, I got a lot of support emails, and people who called themselves Democrats, Republicans, lefties, righties. I mean, because it seems to cross the line for all of us who live in this country. Like, this idea that you just can't sit in a room and even just talk about an issue without worrying about being spied upon, it just seems to cross a pretty sacred line for a lot of people. And then the other thing was, yeah, just like you said, a lot of people got in touch with me and said, let's not be naive here. Let's not think this takes some sort of special public law. This stuff is happening already.
Well, it's always been going on, you know, since the 50s. But, I mean, now it's against anybody, the left, the right. They're spying on everyone. and just the opposite of a free society. But specifically, how did you learn you were being spied on?
It's a great question, and the randomness of how I found out and how it became public only speaks more to how just frightening all of this is. There is a gentleman, an anti-war activist named Max Obishevsky in Baltimore, and Max had the feeling that he was being followed or tailed. And so what he did was he went to the ACLU and asked them to file a state Freedom of Information Act request. And what was produced, out of 3,000 pages that they had, they gave 41 of those pages. And on those 41 pages, what was revealed was not just things about Max, but just all kinds of drippings and droppings about other surveillance that had been done, including a surveillance on my little anti-death penalty group. And the thing about it that really caught people's eye and that turned it into a national scandal was that it was clear from looking at the documents that the Maryland State Police continued to surveil even after they had made the internal determination that nothing illegal was going on. So it became surveillance for the sake of surveillance. And when you couple that with the fact that the death penalty has nothing to do with any of what Homeland Security Fund is supposed to be funding. I mean, what does anti-death penalty protests have to do with protecting the homeland and Al-Qaeda and terrorism and all that stuff? I mean, it just went from the ridiculous to the offensive very quickly in people's minds.
Well, you know, the famous case back in the 70s of the Texas State Police with 300,000 people in files, spying on every major preacher in every town, keeping notes on what everyone said, and that was found to be illegal, and they never quit. They just went underground. And, of course, they're federally funded. The state police were actually founded by Roosevelt, and so they're really a federally chartered operation. Most people don't know that. But specifically, what I'm worried about is this. I would love to think Barack Obama is great, but he's already saying, hey, the troops are going to stay there until 2011, 2012, till we look at it. He's already saying, yeah, warrantless wiretapping, we're going to do it. He's already, you know, Hillary Clinton, old guard, it's all coming in. But regardless, I see these shows, and it's like, oh, Bush is dastardly expanding this right before he leaves, so it makes it harder for Obama to reverse it. Obama could sign an order, too, and reverse it. The courts can come in and reverse it. So, I see a lot of backpedaling and a lot of establishment left, and I don't care about left and right. I just don't want secret police spying on me.
I think I'll give some credit to Matthews on MSNBC, because he did a segment yesterday about a lot of this, and then the segment was called Brother, Can You Spare Some Change? And I said it was a good statement to ask Obama, because, hey, you can't run on change and then come to us with more of the same. I mean, we can't accept that. We can't accept real debate in this country to only happen in the couple of months before a presidential election. And I'll tell you what a lot of people are going to be keeping their eye on. I mean, one of the great criticisms of Bush and Cheney was the expansion of the executive, the expansion of the power of the executive branch. Will Obama roll that back when he comes into office? I think most people will say, no, he won't. But I think there's the expectation that he should.
Well, I mean, how
speak about the 94 Republican revolution that swept the Republicans into office, because one of the things that allowed them to be swept in was so many people stayed at home those midterm elections because they were so disgusted by the broken promises of Clinton those first 2 years. All kinds of lip service and then nothing to show for it those first couple of years. And I think Obama better be very careful. I mean, he can't draw the lesson that Clinton was too left-wing his first 2 years in office. Clinton got nothing done his first 2 years in office. And then the people, especially young people, stayed home. And so we'll see if Obama learns that lesson from history. But given the fact that he has all these Clintonians around him, it does make you wonder.
Well, I mean, you write for The Nation and some other big publications that would be called progressive or kind of...
Yeah, I write about sports.
Well, I mean, I understand that, but I mean, you're around those people, and you go on TV and talk about issues. What are people, kind of in the establishment left that you bump elbows with, are they starting to get a little concerned about Obama?
I think at this point, Faith, and one of the good things about being a sports writer in these publications, writing about where sports and politics collide, one of the disadvantages is maybe in the absolute center and get to hear all the scuttlebutt, but one of the advantages is I get to at least see a lot of the forest for the trees. And I would say at this point they still have the Obama Kool-Aid hooked up via IV into their arms. And it's going to take a minute before any sort of honeymoon is over on this front. I mean, right now, I just was talking to a bunch of them the other day, and they're all of a sudden saying, well, Hillary Clinton, you know, she could be a fine Secretary of State, a hard worker, very intelligent.
Oh.
And I said, well, weren't you the same person arguing that we had to turn the page on the Clinton era? How is this turning the page on the Clinton? And they're like, well, you got to give him a chance. You're being a naysayer already. You know, he hasn't even been inaugurated yet. But, you know, past is prologue, as they say. I mean, he is laying the groundwork right now. And I'll tell you something. There's something bizarre about our side, you know, people who want to see change, and I'm not saying right wing, left wing, but people who want to see change, people who want to see the end of torture, people who want to see the end of corporate crime and skullduggery, that we're somehow going to be silent and give them a chance. Meanwhile, all of these other forces, the old Clintonites, what have you, the national security state, do you think they're keeping their mouth shut and saying, let's give them a chance? No, they're trying to have influence right now as we speak. So just
Well, that's exactly what I was about to ask you. People need to put pressure on him now, and then there might be some change. But if people signal, oh, we're just in love with you and have lovey-dovey eyes and are swooning, they're going to go crazy. So let's talk about that when we get back with our guest, one of the biggest sports writers out there.
Everybody knows that the dice are loaded. Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows.
David Zirin is our guest. He'll be with us about 15 minutes of the next hour, so for the next 20 minutes or so. Then we're going to have open phones for the rest of the next hour and cover news. We have David Ray Griffin and Stephen Jones joining us coming up in the hour after that. Our guest is a sports writer who also crosses over into covering the emergence of sports becoming more political, kind of like the Hollywood folks have been so political for 50, 60 years. Well, just now we're seeing, I guess kind of with like a Charles Barkley going back a decade ago, the rise of sports people who he was saying during the break he believes are getting more cultural currency than Hollywood folks into politics. So we'll talk about that before he leaves us. But finishing up with being spied on, after you learned you'd been spied on, were they still following you around or going to your meetings or, you know, watching the evil sports writer? Had the investigation on you ended?
Well, according to the reports, and once again, we're just going by the reports here, the investigation itself had ended. And since all this took place, you know, more Freedom of Information Act requests have come through. More information has revealed itself, and it turns out they were spying on everybody from anti-war groups to the Chesapeake Climate Control Committee. I mean, so you look at the whole broad swath of who they were spying on, and it's pretty much anybody that was trying to have any sort of community or civic interaction with the government was spied upon. And to me, it's evidence of a lot of things. It's evidence that the previous governor here, Bob Ehrlich, was as paranoid as Nixon in terms of his own political stability. But it also says something really interesting to me about Homeland Security dollars. I mean, we're living in a time, obviously, of serious financial crisis. And how much state money, how much of this federal money is going to states if they have the kind of money to dither away on surveilling the Chesapeake Climate Control Committee? I mean, what does that say about the priorities of where our tax dollars are going?
Well, I myself, as a talk show host, have been surveilled, and it's really ham-fisted. I mean, this goes back a decade ago, where you'd be at some event and some mainline political deal, and somebody walk over and go, we need to shoot these politicians. We ought to bomb them. and then you'd follow the person out of the parking lot and be an unmarked police car. I mean, it's just so ham-fisted the way they try to provocateur.
Yeah, no, that's right, that's right. And it does create its own paranoia as well, because I was in a meeting where we were talking about this, and one person said, we have to watch out for that very thing, the people who come in and they raise all these provocative ideas of violence and whatnot. And then someone else said, yeah, but we also have to watch out for people who are very conservative and don't want us to do anything, because that's also how they operate. And I said, wait a minute, so what? So we have to watch out for people who are too wild and then people who aren't wild? Who's left? I mean, you get to this point where anybody who you don't know then becomes a suspect, and that has an absolutely chilling, if not crippling, effect on people's ability to just be civically engaged.
Well, that's why you just have to obey the laws, do the right thing, speak up, and not cower and hide. I mean, back during the 90s with militia groups, they would immediately get into these paranoid mindsets and start hiding out, thinking everybody was after them, and then that was perfect for the feds to come in and actually try to get them to be violent so they could get more funding. I mean, it's the same thing on the left or the right. All of this paranoia hiding underneath the desk really feeds into what the feds want, and it's just despicable. I don't know how they find people that are willing to do this. But so you guys in your meetings, though, never had anybody try to provocateur that you know of?
Back in the day, I mean, if you're talking about in the last several years, since, no.
Oh, but you did
have them.
Not
the last several years.
But you did before.
Back in the day.
Well, we'll stay there. Stay there. Back in 60 seconds.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Well, he's a sports writer. Writes for a lot of big publications, including The Nation. David Zirin, his website is edgeofsports.com. Got links to it up on Infowars.com. And they had a little in the death penalty group. And by the way, whether you agree with that or disagree with it, totally peaceful group. Historically, you don't hear death penalty groups of hurting anybody. I mean, it being spied on by the state police with federal funds. And incidentally, I am for the death penalty as a moral thing. I mean, if you catch somebody red-handed killing somebody premeditatedly, I think they should die. But I'm against the death penalty because we found over a third of those on death row end up are completely innocent. And the system is so, I mean, when the Houston Crime Lab alone in 1 year framed 4,000 people, and some of them went to death row in Texas, there's a problem here. So, but regardless, Dave, we were talking about years ago, you know, you found out about it later, were there feds or state police in your group trying to agitate or trying to radicalize you guys?
Well, I'll say two things. First of all, on the question you just said, I'm in agreement with you about that. I mean, I'm not one of those people who's morally against the death penalty. I just think the system itself is so riddled with errors and problems and biases that it just does not operate effectively in a democratic society. On the second point, no, the people who we know absolutely positively were plants, were spies, were actually the remarkable, like a young woman who just was like this kind-faced person who just asked a lot of very good questions and took copious notes and made sure she was on all the email lists. I mean, I you know, almost a forgettable person. I mean, fortunately, I never erase any emails. And I went back and looked at all the several dozen emails she'd sent me over her time in the group, and they're so benign. And that's part of, I guess, what makes an effective long-term plant. But it was also benign, we have to remember, because her own conclusions, according to the declassified documents, was that we weren't doing anything wrong. And so, and the scandal, like I said, and I can't repeat this enough, is that she was sent back in after reporting that nothing illegal was going on.
I was just thinking about that. The case with Michael Moore, where, you know, he shows the peace group, the anti-war group that bake cookies
right.
every week, and then they learn the guy was a police informant because he died in a car wreck. I mean, any gauge on how many spies just through that state police program in Maryland there are?
Oh, we know from the documents that they devoted hundreds of man and woman hours to spying on groups, and you could do a lot of damage in that time. If you think that a typical group at most meets for an hour or two a week, and you think about hundreds of hours that we know about, I mean, then you're talking about them really covering a lot of ground and a lot of money going into this as well. And then the fact that, I mean, I know you played a clip of this off the Rachel Maddow show, but the fact that they entered us into these anti-terror databases and lumped us in within these databases that are incredibly harmful, and who knows what kind of access that gives to our personal lives if you happen to be one of those people in those
databases. My dad was driving one of my cars. I'd sold it to him, and he hadn't changed the registration over. And the cop pulled him over in the middle of nowhere in Texas one night, like 10 o'clock at night, and said, wait right there for like 10 minutes, then came up and said, well, you're not Alex Jones. And he said, yeah, but he said, yeah, you've got a handle with care note in my computer system. You know, you're on a watch list. So now the police departments are dialing in to these private databases as well. Were you aware of that?
No, I was not. Good to know.
Well, once that happened to my dad about 6 months ago, I looked into it and found out that, yeah, they've got all sorts of databases, and a lot of the stuff in them is wrong. Final segment with our guest. We'll talk about the influence of sports and politics when we get back.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
Open phones in this hour at 1-800-259-9231 after our guest leaves us here in about 7-8 minutes. Got a lot of other news I haven't gotten to yet. Some interesting developments on the health front. They have now implanted, and there's a big race to do this in the last month, several artificially grown organs in the human body, grown from your own tissue. No need to even use aborted baby parts to do it. So that is coming up as well. I have some interesting news clips I want to play and comment on, too. But we're talking to national sports writer, writes for The Nation and other publications, Dave Zirin. His website is edgeofsports.com. My website's, of course, Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. Dave, shifting gears in the time we have left, what you're really reporting on now is the expansion the exponential growth of sports icons and sports legends and just average players also getting involved in politics more and more. A, why hadn't they been involved in politics a lot in the past? And then B, why are they now, why is it becoming more acceptable for them to be involved in the culture?
We're getting finally finished with a whole era that I like to think of as the era of Michael Jordan. And that's not a reference to the great basketball player's skills on the courts, but to his famous statement about why he wouldn't stand up to North Carolina Senator Jesse Helms because he said Republicans buy sneakers too. I mean, it was a statement of apolitical principle, if there is such a thing. And this idea that making money is king and everything else comes in second. And so that has dominated a sports world, which is such a huge globalized business.
By the way, I mean, I think that's a very cowardly, I'm not attacking Michael Jordan, but that really is a self-centered, mindless comment. And the guy's not stupid, obviously. I mean, thinking he's in a bubble and nothing affects him, but go ahead.
No, that's exactly the point, is that it's a statement of saying in a very proud way, I could care less about anything that happens in the world. I only care about selling my sneakers. And it really did fit in with this huge trillion-dollar globalized sports industry, this athletic industrial complex, which has become so massive. Now, while that philosophy dominated a generation, you also had a lot of those lesser or middling players who were just frightened, you know, who came from poor or working-class backgrounds, They know that the shelf life for a bench player or a role player is only a couple of seasons, and you just want to make as much money as you can. And to speak out about politics and risk that, it just seemed foolhardy for a lot of players, for a generation of players, to actually risk it. But what you're starting to see right now is a bunch of players taking a different approach and saying, wow, I have this remarkable platform. I have all of this cultural capital. If I say something, it might actually make some news. Why don't I try to use it to try to do some good? And that, to me, is a welcome thing. And a lot of people say, well, who cares? It's athletes. Why should I care what they say? This is why. Because jocks are role models. Whether we think that that's a good thing or not, that's a question of opinion.
It's like a warrior. It's like a warrior archetype.
Exactly. It's a fact that these guys are role models. And in my early 20s, I was a school teacher in third grade. I can tell you, it's deep that these guys are role models.
Well, just to interject something, because you're so on target here, it's a cop-out. I mean, when we have Hollywood people sometimes on this show, our detractors will say, well, who cares what they have to say? Well, then why do advertisers hire them? Why do government officials love to get stars on board? The truth is, when somebody doesn't like what a star is saying, they play that card of so what they have to say. But bottom line, in this culture, that type of stuff is king. So that's a total cop-out, but go ahead.
No, I agree. But here's the thing. If they're going to be role models, and if we all agree also, just factually, one child born in a generation is going to be able to hit a 90-mile-an-hour fastball for a 350 average over a 20-year major league career. In other words, the odds of becoming a star yourself as a young child are infinitesimal. Then we have to ask ourselves, then, well, what else are they modeling? I mean, if they're modeling that Jordan ethos that says, well, life is about making money and the hell with your fellow man, that's an actual role modeling that people will take advantage
of. Exactly. Not speaking out, that's a great thought. Not speaking out is a form of communication right there.
It is, and it's modeling. This is all about role modeling. So when these young kids, say it's a chubby, short kid who doesn't have a dream in the world of dunking a basketball, and he's tuned into his role model, LeBron James, and what he's getting from LeBron James is, you know what, it matters to think about politics. It matters to care about an election. It matters to hold leaders accountable for what they say. That's a very different kind of lesson than, hey, if you can dunk a basketball and be 6'8", life is good.
Wow, absolutely. And then that's the exact type of message, though, that corporate America doesn't want. They want the basketball and football and baseball stars to say only care about bling, only care about money, don't believe politically involved. But when the heroes start telling the kids, hey, be real heroes, be involved politically, be involved in things that matter, be involved in your community, that could actually bring back a viable culture. Oh, no, we can't have that.
And that's another interesting thing about athletes, because, Joe DiMaggio said this 60 years ago. He said, rich boys don't become star pro athletes because you got to have a hunger in your belly to make it. I mean, it's a bit of a broad generalization, but it is true that even though a lot of these athletes, they've got tons of money, they might live in a gated community, but it's about where they come from. And so there's a point of relation and a point of connection with regular folk that I think the typical Hollywood celebrity just does not have.
Yeah, absolutely. The nouveau riche especially, they just don't have a fire in the belly. They're into, leisurely playing golf and screwing around and managing, their companies. They don't have that fire in the belly that somebody who could become a sports champion generally does.
And when you know it's whether or not your family gets out of a terrible situation. I mean, I can tell you, you go down to Brooklyn at, 2 o'clock in the morning down at Coney Island, you'll see people dribbling basketballs with two hands up and down the court, maybe with a brick tied around each ankle to strengthen those muscles. I mean, it is a monastic, sacrificial life that most of them still don't make it anyway.
Same thing with boxing.
Definitely. Definitely. I mean, boxing is the ultimate warrior sport, and the sacrifice for becoming a boxer is profound, because these young people aren't stupid. They watch HBO Real Sports, they see the documentaries, and they know that when they hit their 40s after a boxing career, they might not be speaking in sentences that they their own mother could understand. But it's a sacrifice that they try to make to try to get out of a certain financial or economic climate. And but that's also why athletes have a real sway with young people, with poor kids, because it's because they're like, look, I've been there, and I'm telling you, you know, you're not going to be in the NBA, but you could be a thinking person who makes a difference in this world.
Well, I mean, I think it's important for these stars to explain that they're not only valuable because they are a sports star, but that there are other things that are, frankly, even more important. And I think that message from them has been lacking, the gang member activity, the arrogance, the corruption. Certainly the media magnifies and, you know, loves to only focus in on that. But that's had a detrimental effect on our young people. And absolutely, we need to get them salvaged. In the few minutes we've got left with our amazing guest, we don't normally have sports writers on, but most sports writers don't have Homeland Security, state police spying on them.
That is true.
Dave Zirin, just an amazing individual, edgeofsports.com. In closing, a few minutes on Pat Tillman. I mean, that whole thing of him getting sucked in, you know, that same, you know, hero, warrior attitude. He wants to go fight for his country. He finds out Afghanistan's a photo op. I've talked to his brother. He finds out it's a scam. He dies mysteriously. They cover it up. You've written a lot about that. Give us your take on Pat Tillman.
Oh, and I spoke with his mother recently as well. I mean, the Pat Tillman story is both an American tragedy and an American crime, and we've still yet to see people truly held accountable for it. I think one member of the brass, a senior officer, got knocked down a peg, like at a star taken off or something like that. But not the real kind of accountability that we need. I mean, Pat Tillman thought he was going to risk his life and die if necessary for his country and for freedom, and instead he died for public relations. And that in and of itself is a sin. And the family has the right to know what happened to him, the right to know to all the facts, the right to know why his journal was destroyed after he died, the right to know why his personal effects were burned on site, and also, more than anything else, the right to know why their son was exploited in the ruthless manner that he was in death, in a way that in life, I would argue, Pat Tillman absolutely would have rejected.
You know, you offered to go to the bottom of the hour. This is too important. Can you do that still?
Sure.
Okay, let's, because we've got a break and come back with a quick segment, but get started now because you've been really close to this case. As close as we can, you know, get to the truth, what really happened with Tillman?
Let's do it.
We've got about a minute now. Go ahead and get started.
Oh, okay, just started now. Well, one of the things about the case that is still just makes me very concerned is the reports upon his death. I mean, there's talks of friendly fire, of chaos. The Washington Post did a painstaking recreation of that last battle where half of his battalion goes out, circles all the way around, and then confuses the battalion that remained, and they go after each other. And yet, once the autopsy results were revealed months and months after the fact, he was killed at shots in the forehead at very close range. And it's just, it's hard to square those two stories together. I mean, on the original death, one of the troops even said that his last words were, "This can't be effing happening to me. I'm effing Pat Tillman," which sounded like something out of a movie when I read it at the time. But and it turns out there's no way he would have said that if he'd been shot in the forehead. That's not what happened.
Yeah, well, it was a way to degrade him and put him down. We'll talk about, was he murdered because he was writing letters home and going to come home against the war? Did they black op him? We'll talk to the man who's talked to the family when we get back.
Waging war on corruption. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
David Zirin's our guest. He's written for the Washington Post, New York Daily News, New York News Today, Baltimore Sun, Houston Chronicle. List goes on and on. Appears on national TV. Does his own radio show. And he's just written The People's History of Sport. Sounds like a great book to read. Got to tell you, most of these sports writers bore me to death. And they also don't have the state police spying on him for no reason. That's why he's here. But he's also knows the Tillmans, talked to them, written about it, exposed what's going on. Yeah, I mean, they lied over and over again, and they shot him up close from just a few yards away in the face. I talked to his brother and others years ago. You know, he was writing letters home saying he was going to go public. In the time we've got left, I mean, fleshing out the evidence, but it all points towards a snuff, a frag, a murder, so that he wouldn't come home and be a poster boy against the war. I mean, what else could it be? Or was it some guys that were jealous of him? I mean, it certainly looks like it was done on purpose.
It certainly does. I mean, I spoke at great length with his mom, Mary, and it's her belief. And as much as I've studied this, I mean, she's somebody who's been over this with a fine-tooth comb because she wants justice for her son. And she's convinced that it was the entire tragedy was a result of the horrible chaos of the moment and then people in a fumbling, bumbling, embarrassing way trying to cover it up, followed by a series of, you know how the armed forces work, just a series of slow bureaucratic grindingness that just made the entire thing worse every step of the way.
Well, I don't think she knows how to use an M16, though. The point is, he's waving his arms saying, stop shooting, and they run up and shoot him, and then it's all an accident, and they cover it up?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. I mean, there's a lot about that that doesn't pass the smell test.
So you don't agree with him?
Well, I mean, I certainly respect the angle from which she is taking it. I am very, very skeptical about coincidences. And for all the brave men and women who've died overseas, we have to remember that only a very small percentage of the, I believe it's over a million troops who've cycled through, have actually died. And when one of them happens to be the most famous one, and it happens to happen concurrent with the Abu Ghraib photos getting released, the worst public relations disaster for the Pentagon, it's just, I mean, I just wasn't raised to believe in coincidences.
Well, he was planning to go public against the war.
That's it, too. He was writing letters to people like Noam Chomsky. He was making a true effort to intellectually come to terms with what was happening with U.S. foreign policy. And that's one of the other things when I say it was an American tragedy is because it's hard not to view him as being a microcosm or a representative of the country as a whole. You know, angry and gung-ho after 9/11, and yet going into Iraq and not understanding the logic of that, and then that being a pretext for him starting to question the broader war on terror.
Well, I mean, the way they built him up to a god level, and then what would have happened if he would have come home and spoke out against the war as he was planning to do, I mean, they just couldn't put up with that. And then all the mysterious things and the different stories. And I mean, I'm sorry, troops don't run up 5 feet from you in broad daylight after you're begging and screaming in English and shoot you in the face. I mean, come on.
It's not something I understand, to be perfectly frank with you.
Well, we know this. It became a PR disaster for him one way or the other.
It sure did. It sure did. But I really do think, though, that the twin impact of the Abu Ghraib photos with the death of Tillman in a friendly fire situation would have been ridiculous. We have to remember, they gave Tillman the Silver Star posthumously. The Silver Star is only reserved for death in the theater of active combat. It's specifically not reserved for friendly fire, which gives you an idea about the level of cover-up that was involved.
Well, you know that the original Army doctors that first saw the body said that it looked like foul play.
Mm. No, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, so...
I really do believe this entire thing is the equivalent of when you see a little thread off of a sweater and you pull it, and just the more you pull it, the more it unravels.
Yeah. Well, an Army doctor who's a forensics investigator, that's what they look at is battle wounds. And they said, This looks like it is probably, I can pull up I'm sure you've seen the form, but they marked down,
yeah.
Looks like he was murdered. Looks like this was a hit.
No, this is what we're talking about.
And he got powder burns on his face. I mean, give me a break.
Mm-hmm. This is what we're talking about, and it's nothing pleasant. It's, like I said, it's an American tragedy and an American crime.
Well, great talking to you, and we appreciate all the work you're doing. Dave Zirin, we'll talk to you again come up in December about your book, The People's History of Sports, because I like your angle on stuff, and we appreciate your time.
Wonderful. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, there it goes, folks. We're going to come back and get into your phone calls and a bunch of news. I got a bunch of audio clips I haven't gotten to yet. And David Ray Griffin and Stephen Jones are joining us.
I want to know where to go. I want to know where to go.
Give me the go.
I want to know where to go.
It's got like hundreds of millions of views online, literally. It's a newscast where these locals think there's a leprechaun in a tree. And we all come out and say to the leprechaun, give me the gold. So that's why we're playing that little remix. They're having some fun because there's so much craziness going on. Paul, Ivan, Vinny, Wayne, Adam, I promise we're getting to all of you. Paul in the Netherlands, after the leprechaun leaves us in 5 minutes, the Swedish leprechaun, He's a traveling student, a foreign student, a leprechaun, Ted Anderson. But no, to get serious here, you know, we're trying to blunt the bad news. U.S. home construction sinks to all-time record low. Charts predict Dow Jones Industrial Average to go down to 6,000 points in less than a month. That's not just our experts, that's CNBC's experts. Paulson says none of the bailout goes to American industry. And by the way, I'm against the bailout for the car people, the automakers. But if you're going to give $5 trillion to offshore banks to buy up stock, that's what they're doing, and then I got to pay for it as a taxpayer, I'd rather give it to GM workers making $75 an hour. And by the way, all of them don't. A very small percentage do. The media uses that. So, yeah, not $25 billion for the automakers. We're not going to make cars there anymore, folks. We don't make anything. Nothing for them, and it probably wouldn't save them down the road. I don't know what's bad news, and I wanted to bring Ted Anderson up because Ted, the owner of the Genesis Network and also Minus Resources, 30 years in gold and silver brokerage, Ted has some of the store closure lists. Now, I've got them that are 1,000 names long. We're not going to read all these, but some of the big ones. You know, it's not just Circuit City. And again, I probably go out to eat about twice a week when I work late. About a third of the restaurants I try to go to and eat at, they're gone. Ted Anderson, tell us what's going on there.
Yeah, okay. I mean, obviously, Circuit City is at the top of the list, but you've got Ann Taylor, you got Lane Bryant, Eddie Bauer, Fashion Bug, Catherine's, the Cachet, the Talbot's closing down, J. Jill, Gap, Foot Locker, Wicks, Levitt's, Bombay closing, Zales, Whitehall, Pierce, Pagoda, Disney. Now, Disney has 98 stores they're shutting down. Home Depot is going to close 15 stores. Macy's, 9 stores. Linen and Things, Movie Gallery, Pacific Sunwear, Pep Boys, Sprint Nextel, JCPenney's. Now, there's a big name. Ethan Allen, Wilson Leather closing down. Sharper Image, and there's another one. I mean, people are thinking about buying gift cards. I mean, I won't even do that this year. There's just too many stores that are going to be gone. KB Toys, Lowell's, Dillard's. I mean, there's a lot more on the list. We just don't have time to keep going with that. I mean, the GM thing is just one part of the whole segment. We're talking about the comics now not having enough gold to deliver and make good on all
this
contract.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I mean, we told people about this a month ago. Now it's mainstream news, as usual. What we tell you is later news. Explain that briefly, like Max Kaiser did. For those that don't know, the paper gold crowd has been trying to suppress the price of gold, but now people are demanding physical delivery. And then, of course, they don't have it. Explain that naked shorting.
It's like the fractional reserve banking system. When you're dealing with the comics, most trades close, and the contracts expire worthless. They don't take delivery. They just sell them to the next guy and to the next guy until the time value's gone, and then the contract's gone. If you have a contract to buy or sell, and if you let it expire, it means that it goes away, and nothing ever happens with it. The same holds true in the options market. But now people are buying the COMEX contracts and they're wanting to take delivery, and there's just simply not enough gold to do it. And so the physical market itself is reflecting the real prices of gold. What's going on?
Yeah, because people can buy a COMEX for $750, and then they think, well, I'll just take physical delivery and I'll be able to sell it for $900. People are paying premiums everywhere, and they're saying, sorry, we don't have the gold.
Yeah, and then you have what's called a force majeure, and the contract settles, and there is no delivery on the gold. There's just not enough gold to go around, and of course, that market is all smoke and mirrors. It's all leverage. People are putting in 10% of their money to leverage, 100% of the deal. So 90% of it is all loan. And
I know where the gold's at. The leprechaun got it.
Well, we're out here obviously accumulating. And the other thing, too, Alex, is gold is sneaking up inch by inch right now. Rather than having those big $100 increases and all that volatility, gold hit about 710 on its low. And today, it's seen a high of $764.30. And right now, it's up $2 and it's trading for $740. And what's going to happen is you're going to see $800 an ounce. And it's coming so slowly and so steadily that you hardly even know it happened.
Look, it's real simple. They are killing the dollar. They've decided to do it. And so in the interim, they're going to run it up and print as many as they can and give it to the banks to buy real assets with it and then leave us holding the fiat currency bag. How do you protect yourself, folks? You move into silver and gold, and you do that from people that have it in their vault. In his little pot of gold, you get it from somebody who gets it in such bulk that he passes on that huge discount. I mean, ladies and gentlemen, most gold brokerage houses and outfits that have been around decades, they're sold out, or they can sell you one coin at huge 30-40% premiums. I've explained this. You are crazy if you don't buy some silver and gold. And I'm not saying get rid of all your stocks, all your bonds. You know, diversification is always king. But for friends, for family, for children, it's great to give them, some silver, some gold, to have them lock it up in a safe or, have them put it in the mattress, whatever. It's a great gift to teach people about real money with this Christmas season coming up. But regardless, give your children the gift of having some nest egg. Ted, if you Google, Congress looks at taking over pension funds, or taxing pension funds and 401ks. I mean, they're really getting ready to go after those, Ted.
No, they sure are, and they have to do it because they have to step up and they have to bail out just about everything that has trouble. And where do you suppose they're coming up with all this money? It's all printed money, and they want to take control. They really want to get people, in the grasp of government. A big government is coming, and it's not only just our current government elected officials, but it's the banking institutions that are meeting, like this G40 meeting that we just had, the G20 meeting we just had. It looks really, really gloomy out there. And as a matter of fact, the reason why gold ran up today is because the Mideastern countries were deciding that they wanted to get out of the U.S. dollar and they're going to switch it into gold. And
that's right. Iran 3 days ago went $75 billion of their reserves, pulled it out of the U.S. and bought gold and then shipped it to Tehran. So Venezuela and others are doing the same thing. And now they have former CIA employee Zawahiri threatens America again, saying they're going to bomb us to show Barack Obama. All that'll do is let Barack Obama become more popular and attack more countries, which is why the globalists are going to attack themselves. This is really shaping up to be crazy. Ted, I'm going to move on to the calls. I appreciate you coming on, but briefly, you still have a few Maple Leafs. You almost sold out of those, I know. Folks, you can't find those anywhere. You've got all different sizes of American Eagles, which, again, you can't find anywhere. You've got Franks, you've got Sovereigns, you've even got some collectible coins as well. But everybody knows I like these bullion coins or collector coins close to bullion. Again, Ted bought a whole bunch of these back when gold was $50 cheaper, and so he can still pass that on. Though I talked to you this morning, you are running out of these deals. Ted, how long until you've exhausted your little pot of gold there that you bought when gold was a lot lower. How long till it has to go up?
Well, I know this, Alex. I know I can hold the prices today. And I can see the prices jumping up in the marketplace, too. I mean, at $764, if it holds there, my prices are going to have to come up, too. I mean, I locked in on a lot of stuff. The people are buying it. I really appreciate the business that they're giving us. It obviously helps the network immensely. But I can tell you right now, I only can do so much. You know, I mean, I'm buying what I can. I mean, I knew when gold was at $710, it was a buy. I just, you know, I picked up as much inventory as I could.
Yeah, bottom line, folks, it's only going to go up. I mean, all the conventional wisdom says that. Who knows? But the point is, buy it now. We can still pass on these huge savings. And, Ted, you've still got all the coins I mentioned and the silver, right? The
same price is actually, I got $11 discount on Franks right now. I've got about a $22 discount on British Sovereigns. I have the silver dollars, the silver walking Liberty half dollars, and they're currently right now at $8.90. The silver dollars are at $25. It's way more than double the price. You know, we've got a good variety of things to pick from, and I would suggest that you do it now because there's a lot of problems out there. And
now, let's explain. Silver is down at $14 or whatever it is right now, and then the silver dollars everywhere are $25. Again, that shows the manipulation of not just gold but the silver market. So Ted isn't even selling you silver dollars. He wants to give you his half dollars that are right down there by melt, beautiful, gorgeous coins that even have some collector value. So 800-686-2237, 800-686-2237. Let's go out of this segment and into your phone calls with Ted Anderson's new theme song. Here is Ted singing, I Want to Know Where the Gold At. Again, 800-686-2237. And the brokers are generally there till midnight. Last night, I know they left at about 10 last night, but they are there in the evenings. 800-686-2237. Take advantage of this today. 800-686-2237. Ted, thanks for having the network.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for having me up, Alex.
You bet, and thanks for having the gumption to offer people such great deals. 800-686-2237 or minusresources.com. Okay, you want to know where the gold's at? It's right there with Ted Anderson, 1-800-686-2237. Okay, all right. Got some big guests coming up, but I want to take your phone calls right now and appreciate you holding. Paul in the Netherlands. Welcome, Paul.
Hello, Alex.
Hello.
Hey, I know where the gold is. I got really lucky here in the Netherlands. It's really odd because there's this gold shop, as it were, near Amsterdam, and they're actually selling the gold at the actual price. That's official. It's just a company, and they don't put any interest in on it. It's just crazy.
Yeah, and what they do is they buy it when it's low, and then they sell it when it's high, and they always have that setback. And yeah, Europe is where Ted's getting his gold. I mean, it's hard to get here in the U.S.
It's really cheap. I got an embarrassing lot of it, and I got really lucky because now it's starting to run out over here too.
Oh, really? It's running out. Well, do you have a little pot of gold now?
Yeah, I got the gold.
Anyway, I love it.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. It's also kind of useful because even if the prices stay low, I'm a goldsmith, so I can always use it.
Oh, good. So you're in that business.
I just got lucky. Anyway.
All right, so we got another leprechaun calling. Go ahead. That's the secret. We're all really leprechauns.
Yeah, sort of.
Anyways, go ahead, my friend.
I have three subjects I wanted to talk about, and I'll try to get through them as quickly as possible.
Okay.
First to start off with is something about entertainment, and I mean movies. Have you ever heard of the series Firefly and of the movie that got out of it, Serenity?
Oh, it's excellent. Yeah, it's total anti-New World Order. It admits the government is putting Prozac into the atmosphere to make you serve their world government. And all total anti-New World Order.
I can really recommend it to everyone. And Fox, the producer, they even just cut the series down after, what was it, two seasons?
Because it was only one season, and then they wouldn't let the other shows air, even though it got high ratings. And then so the producer went and made his own movie. He's the guy that And forget it, he's got a bunch of his TV shows like Buffy the Vampire Slayer and all that. He's the creator of Serenity. And yeah. That's the movie. Really the TV show it. Is Firefly. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I mean, I don't really get into a lot of popular culture, but I saw that movie and liked it enough to go buy the TV show on DVD. And, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Okay. Well, let's go to the second subject, the carbon tax thing. Because, you know, if they're actually going to pull it through and everyone's going to pay carbon tax for their own breathing and for their fuels and their cars and everything and electricity, well, I was thinking there's a lot of hydrogen technology out there, and me and my friends are working on several projects on how to really make hydrogen gases really cheaply and not very dangerous, and using it to create electricity, using it to generate propulsion for cars and everything. And
oh, yeah, there are all sorts of clean systems. It just takes massive investment to bring it out to the general market.
But it's not actually that hard to make, because you could practically put a big can of water in your car, put a hydrogen generator in next to it, and then use it and drive for indefinitely. Just you could go anywhere, and it's not hard.
I know,
to make.
But see,
it's
hydrogen's very expensive, as you know, and I appreciate your call. Hydrogen is very explosive, and so they have all these regulations on it. So they're going to use phony environmentalism as a way to suppress all of that. But what I meant was getting it to roll out and retrofitted for the general public. You see, it's going to end up being some huge factory-delivered system instead of lots of local shops doing it. But yeah, no, innovation. One thing about the economy imploding is it is going to cause a lot of grassroots innovation. Good to hear from you, Paul. Could talk to you for hours, but want to give everybody a chance here. Ivan in Pennsylvania, you're on the air. Ivan dropped off. Vinny in California.
Hey, Alex, I know where to go then.
Where is it?
It's in my safe and buried under my house.
Good.
Hey, I love you. I love your show. You know, I want to thank you for all the work that you've done. You've done just an incredible job. Sometimes when I think you're smoking something funny, I go and I do my own research and find out that you were right. I got two questions. I'm praying that you let me get them both in. Number one, on chemtrails, there's a. Have you heard of the black line? I sent Aaron a picture of it a while back. Do you know what that is?
No, it's called the black line.
Yeah, it's called the black line. I sent Aaron a picture, and what it is I've noticed it when I was in Indianapolis. I live in Southern California, and we saw them spraying, and then as soon as the spray stopped, you can see a black continuation of the line. It just happened instantly, almost like it was a track or like an exhausting, but it was way too fast. I mean, you'd have to go hyperspeed in order to get it to finish. But if you could take a look at that when you get a chance, I sent it to Aaron.
It's like they're energizing it with their antenna arrays. Now I know what a black line is. People have witnessed these being energized, changing colors. I've seen it. And the government admits, and now in declassified, that they spray aerosols and then they energize them with these ground antennas in secret projects. So, they're using radio systems to, who knows what they're doing. A lot of it's declassified, but only that they're doing secret tests. Anything else you want to add there, Vinny?
Absolutely.
Stay there, Vinny. And then Wayne and Adam and Troy.
Before you slip into unconsciousness, I'd like to have another.
Okay, going back to Vinny in California on the Schwarzenegger. He said global warming is causing the fires. There's always fires every year all over Southern and Central California, in Northern, and of course, it was, as we said a week ago, college kids not putting out a fire, and illegal aliens out there in the camps. There's camps all over Mexico, northern Mexico into California, where the people live, not attacking them. They just, you know, there's fires outside, you get fires. No, that's not it. The problem is the global warming. We need to tax you. I will save you. All right, going back to Vinny. Vinny, go ahead.
All right, cool. I appreciate the opportunity. I really need your help with something. I was in Indianapolis when Obama was there, and for 2 days, perfectly blue skies. The weather doesn't change, and as soon as he leaves, they blasted us. Then I come back to California, and on Halloween, it's the worst spring I've ever seen. I posted a video on YouTube with four trails going simultaneously. It's just ridiculous. So I'm going to take action. I can still maintain my business, and I'm going to get a radio show. I've got the connections here in the Inland Empire in Southern California. My question to you is, I know I'm going to run into some slack. Who do you go get for advertisers? Because I know we're going to catch some heat, but and I can go sell it. I just need to know, who do I go after?
You won't really catch heat now. I mean, if you're going to buy your own time, I would just do it Saturday or Sunday night. If you want to go for the bigger stations, and then just go on there and, get gun shops, preparedness people. I'd get a leprechaun sponsor, but find a good gold broker. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that'll allow you to do that. It shouldn't be, too much. I mean, if you're a well-spoken guy and you sound like it, just covering issues, then it's a great way to reach out to people. Also, Access TV, huge, very effective. That's how I started out 13 years ago. Now, there's a lot of different venues and different ways to reach out to people. I mean, I don't care if it's a broadsheet, two-page little newspaper you put out once a week to 1,000 homes, in your neighborhood. There's so many things people can do, but that's just one of them. I appreciate your call. Let's go ahead and talk to Wayne in Canada. You're on the air, Wayne.
Hello, Alex. You got a copy?
Yes, sir.
I'm calling from the Great White North up here in Alberta. I can tell you there's no gold up here, but there's a lot of oil. So.
There certainly is, but according to the government, only 1% of the oil's in North America. Total lie, but why not tell the public that?
But anyways, first off, I just want to say it's an honor to finally get a chance to speak to you.
Well, it's an honor to talk to you, my friend.
I've been following you for about 3 years, and I got to admit, I'm a little bit ashamed, because all I've done really is just watch your DVDs and pretty much just listen. I never acted on anything, and I'd be a lot better off right now if I would have. But I got a three-part question for you. It's in regards to Obama. The first one, anybody can take it however they want, but do you think that the Rainbow Coalition and the NAACP are going to place undue stress and pressure on the government and the people of America now that Obama is a president?
Do I think they're going to do what?
Hey?
I misunderstood you. What are they going to do? What are you asking?
Do you feel that the NAACP and the Rainbow Coalition are going to place undue stress on the government and the people of America now that Obama's elected president?
How are they going to do that? Okay, I understand the question. Go ahead.
The second question is in regards to the auto industry. Do you think that they are going to allow the bailout, or are they just simply going to allow the Big Three to go bankrupt so that the banking coalition in Europe can drain out all the funds?
And what's the last question?
The last question is actually your other guest already answered it. I'll let you go, sir.
Thank you. Stephen Jones on together. I thought that would be interesting to have them on both together. The balance of the hour, trying to answer your questions, go to your calls. Adam, Troy, John, we'll get to all of you. One way or the other. But to answer the question about the Rainbow Coalition, Jesse Jackson, all those groups, they're going to be thrown to the back of the bus by Barack Obama. He'll go speak to their groups, but that's about it. Obama isn't going to want to upset, lily white America too much with all of that. In fact, that's why they want a black president, the New World Order, is so they can carry out all of this corruption, carry out the squeezing of the poor. It's called left cover. And so now he can warmonger and spy and do everything, but the left will just can't criticize a black guy. And so it means they can move the ball down the field. I don't know what's going to happen with the big three automakers. They'll probably just get bought up or merge with Toyota, you know, Nissan, Datsun, some of the other companies, German companies, you know, Daimler, Chrysler. They're going to get reorganized. $25 billion, $50 billion, it's not going to bail them out. The real economy is dying by design. We were put in this position. The bankers did everything they could to kill the economy. Then they cut the credit off. So I think you'll end up having some smaller bailout in the interim. But again, I don't have a crystal ball. Usually when you think I'm predicting something, I'm only reading what the globalists have said they're going to do. We have articles up on prisonplanet.com right now where they openly admit global warming's fake. They're going to use it to enslave us. I mean, they admit they're building FEMA camps. I mean, they admit they want our guns. I mean, I'm only covering what they say they're going to do. They aren't being very clear on the auto bailout right now. It looks like they're not going to do it, but they still could. But what will that do? Put off the inevitable for a year or two? So I hope that answers your question, sir. Let's go ahead and jam in another call here right now. Let's go ahead and talk to, is it Adam in Texas? Adam, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, man. I know your show, and I know pretty much that you've got generally the same ideas as myself and a lot of Americans. But, man, I've been doing so much research, and I'm just getting to the point where I'm trying to figure out exactly what we need to do as Americans to wake up other Americans and be like, look, these things are there. They're here. You know, what do you think is the best thing that we can do?
We need individuals to pull all sorts of stunts. Let's say you own a printing company, put out a fake, you know, with 1,000 copies or 10,000 copy newspaper, your local paper, get the same typeset, make it look the same, and then write up little blurbs with real information in it, and then that will end up being on all your local news about that stunt, and then those issues that are in the article will get out. Same thing just happened in New York. Or micro FMs. As long as you're not interfering with a commercial station, and as long as people are quiet about it, just put them up and let them be there. People won't even know where it's coming from. Have a local micro FM, you know, carry Genesis Network or, you know, whatever you want, and put out the truth that way on the FM dial. Access TV, making copies of films, emailing your own email list with films, talking to your neighbors, talking to your church. Look, people have this image that we have to all fix everything ourselves individually. No, it's all of us doing a little something. And, I mean, does that answer your question?
To an extent. I also had another question for you, and I haven't listened too much, so I don't know if you've already talked about this. Do you know much about, like, Planet X?
It's not real. You know what? I'm going to put you on hold. During breaks, I'm going to be taking calls just for the internet audience. Stay with us. I'll answer your question in the next break.
Genesis Communications Radio Network proudly presents The Alex Jones Show, because there's a war on for your mind.
Welcome, welcome, welcome on this 19th day of November 2008. Got about 52 minutes left in this coast-to-coast broadcast. We are live, transmitting over the web at prisonplanet.tv on the visual, on the three-dimensional there, on the two-dimensional. And we are going over the radio as well on the AM and FM dial, global shortwave, the internet at Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. Don't forget, for this month in November into December, you get 5 months free at PrisonPlanet.tv. All of my films in super high quality, hundreds of weekly TV reports, extras, a bunch of other films, 4.5 years up and running, thousands of pieces of media, and your membership at PrisonPlanet.tv also makes this radio show and future films possible, so be sure and check out the 5 months free right now at PrisonPlanet.tv. Now, I thought I'd get both these guys on together, something a little different. I mean, obviously, I could have one of them on for 10 hours. They've got so much knowledge apiece, but we've got David Ray Griffin on with physics professor Stephen Jones together. and they're both big 9/11 truthers. And so I thought, well, originally I was going to have them on for this hour because National Geographic wanted to interview me and others about 9/11 truth. And then I found out that the guy that was doing the piece, this Erickson, specializes in hit pieces on the JFK assassination, on other, and I watched some of his programs, and let me tell you, I've never seen anything like it. So I didn't want to be a kind of a cardboard cutout in a stacked deck. I think Griffin and Jones are still being interviewed for it, but they were going to be here today, and I saw the program, you know, inside the shooter car this Sunday you made for Discovery, and I mean, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. I mean, bottom line, they admit they tore up the Chrysler, took it apart, hid the evidence, took it away. Witnesses said there were bullet holes all over it, in the windshield. None of that. And a parade of spooks telling us that Oswald did it alone. And I just said, you know what? I just don't even want to be around these people. And they're like, but you don't want to be on TV? No, I don't care. That said, I've never turned down an interview. But you know what? When it's this bad, I just am not going to be part of it. Bringing that subject up, let's go to David Ray Griffin first, briefly. David, I guess you're still going to be interviewed by these guys?
Well, it is scheduled, but it's up in the air. And, I felt the show they did on 9/11 was pretty horrible. And, you know, they, excuse me, I'm mixing with the...
JFK.
The History Channel did that.
Yeah.
And I haven't seen enough of the National Geographic. The one show I turned down was the second BBC show,
mm-hmm.
Which was on World Trade Center 7. And Stephen went ahead and went on that one, and I'm glad he did because he was able to get in a lot of good points, as did Richard Gage. And, you know, they said, well, that show was going to be better. It indeed was better than the original BBC show on the towers, but it was still... full of lies, and mainly the big lie about Barry Jennings' timeline, which they totally took out of context.
Okay, we're going to go over that, and I'm glad that's why you're here today. And I was originally just to have you talk about 9/11 evidence. Okay, I agreed to do BBC, and that was a hit piece and was twisted. But let me tell you, they at least acted like they were getting our side. This guy, this Erickson, if you watch the JFK shooter car, inside the shooter car, completely one-sided. I have never seen a hit piece even approaching this. So a word to the wise is sufficient to you and Professor Jones, both of you are professors. I mean, believe me, I don't just back out of... I mean, I'm not afraid of going up against somebody. But, I mean, if I know that their specialty is this type of intellectual quackery, then I'm not going to be part of it. So just a heads up. Let's bring Stephen Jones up. Speaking of that last BBC hit piece, what did you think of that, Professor Jones?
Well, I want to talk about the BBC, but also the National Geographic interview that I have already had, actually, Alex, last week. So starting with BBC, like I say, I was able to get a few points in. I was very disappointed in their headline that came out before the preliminary report from NIST, and that was that the World Trade Center 7 mystery has been solved. Well, you know, it's not solved until they get the report, until we have a chance to respond and review what they said. So, yeah, overall the piece was basically a hit piece, but like David said, we were able to get a few points across, which I was very gratified that we were able to get some truth out through that medium. I think it's very important that we continue to reach people through the media, even if they're not entirely friendly to us. You know, it gives us a chance to reach people, then they can get online and learn more. Now, Alex, I would like to say about this Robert Erickson. I was interviewed by him last week, let's see, it would be Thursday. And frankly, I thought his questions were very fair. I don't think I gave him a lot of ammunition to do a hit piece because I was very circumspect in my answers. There was a question, there are a lot of questions about the science, the technical details, the dust of 9/11, which I was just very pleased to answer. And frankly, he seemed quite interested. So I don't know if this will be different from the JFK. I suspect it will.
Well, what they do is they do with crop circles, with other JFK events, they do specific little scientific tests, and then they say case closed, Oswald alone, you know, shot him from behind. So I mean, I'm not saying you're bad for doing the interview. I'm glad you did it. I'm just saying look out. I also kept asking him, what do you want to interview me about? Send me questions. And they wouldn't give me the questions. So that's the main reason. But let's get into the latest BBC piece with David Ray Griffin. And then, and then Professor Jones, come in you know, with your own points on the science as a physicist dealing with this. Professor Griffin, breaking down the latest BBC piece saying we solved Building 7. You know, this is why it happened. Break that down for folks, the distortions.
Well, partly they're basing it on what they assumed NIST was going to say. The NIST report, the report of the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which wasn't out yet, but they clearly were talking with them and had a pretty good idea what they were going to say. And one thing NIST had done was to distort the timeline of Barry Jennings and Michael Hess. As you know, and most of your listeners know, Jennings very clearly said that he and Hess went into the World Trade Center Building 7 very early, right after the first strike. So they were up there by about 9 o'clock. He's certain he was there at 9:03 when the second strike on the South Tower occurred. And shortly thereafter, they went down the stairs. The elevator wouldn't work, and Jennings said he was on the BBC show. He said he was going a landing at a time, and so they were going down very fast. So that means they would have gotten down to the sixth floor by about 9:10 or 9:15 at the latest, and there was this huge explosion. They went back up to the eighth floor, broke a window. Jennings said, I looked out, and both towers were still standing. So what the NIST said, well, these two guys were in there, and there was a big event, but it was just the North Tower coming down. Well, of course, that was 10:28, which is over an hour later. And Hess remained silent, of course, all those years. And then as soon as Jennings dies, the BBC interviews Hess, and Hess is free. You know, freely does an interview now and, of course, tells this new story and tells the timeline. And interestingly, of course, Hess is still alive.
Also on record here, he went on Fox TV, he went on other news channels right after the towers had collapsed, and he's on tape talking about how he quickly got out of the building. And then how the towers collapsed. So clearly on record, BBC and everybody knows that that was a very short time frame, not 3 hours. So we're seeing massive deception right there on its face.
Well, we know that Hess was being interviewed a half mile away before noon, probably 11:34, but at least before noon. And in NIST claim, they didn't even get rescued until 10 after 12 or 10 or 15 minutes after 12. So we know they're lying about that. I don't think Hess, I didn't hear him say anything about the towers coming down, but what he did say was that there was a big explosion. And now he's changed the story, and he says, well, yeah, I thought there was an explosion at the time, but now I realize it was just the North Tower coming down.
Well, the way the program implied it, I mean, they don't state anything in these deceptive pieces, was that it was the towers falling. And then they, you know, got him out of the building after the towers had fallen. I mean, that's the point I'm making, is they imply the explosions are the towers falling.
That's right.
Now, Stephen Jones particularly gets into the science itself. What did you think about the science they were putting out in that piece?
Well, I've been disappointed, you know, they did there. Let me put some background, Alex. About the time they interviewed me, we were finishing up our 14 points paper, which is published in the Open Civil Engineering Journal. So people can Google on that or go to journalofmetal-studies.com, and it's right at the top, a link to this paper in an established journal. So point 11 there, I discussed with the folks from BBC, which has to do with the steel recovery. recovered from the site of World Trade Center 7. It just looks like Swiss cheese. I don't know if you've seen the photos, but it's heavily corroded and shows sulfur inside the steel. And, of course, that's been a point in my first paper on 9/11 and then again on this 14-point paper. And so I raised that with BBC, and we discussed it at some length. In fact, I even did an experiment right there with them taping it with thermite and sulfur added. You and I have talked about this a number of times, I think, Alex.
Well, hold on one moment. I'm actually going to skip this break because this information is too important right now.
With food prices.
Yeah, let's go ahead and skip that break with David Ray Griffin and Stephen Jones because we have both of you. I want to make sure both of you have more time. Specifically, yeah, they're claiming that the metal was corroded in the heat and instead of being, you know, instantly melted. And so can you...
So here's what we did. So FEMA, to their credit, put this data in Appendix C of their report that came out, and then NIST has totally ignored this data on the steel. In fact, NIST admits they didn't look at any steel from World Trade Center 7 in their report. Very blatant violation of normal scientific protocol.
They even lied, Stephen. They said there was no steel from Building 7.
Very interesting point. There's a lot of steel there. I saw the photos of it. But anyway, okay, and I know a lot of it was whisked away, but we do know this sample that still exists because we've been in touch with the people at Worcester Polytechnic Institute. They have the steel from the rubble pile of Building 7, quite a distance, as you know, from the other two towers, so there's really very little question about it, besides markings and so on. Anyway, so back to the story with BBC. So I did this experiment with thermite, which is what I call thermite plus sulfur, and I had a piece of steel from the South Tower. Long story how I got this small sample of steel, but it's actual steel from the World Trade Center. Put this slice of steel in the thermite, touched it off. BBC cameras rolling. I don't see that they showed any of that. But then we took that steel down to the scanning electron microscope and looked at it, and sure enough, there's sulfur in the steel, which didn't surprise me. We'd done this experiment before, but you know, I was trying to get the point across that we know how this sulfur and this attack, there's a hole in the steel when you do this with thermite.
And you showed all this to BBC, and they really didn't show a lot of that.
And they didn't show it.
Well, let me tell you what's going to happen with this other guy from, I mean, you know, it's a production company, who just did a Discovery Channel piece on JFK. Now they're doing the National Geographic. What he does is he hires a bunch of former cops, and we know about these cop crime labs. Oh boy, are they reliable? Give me a break. Beelzebub's more accurate. And then they have them, and they're going to come out and show, knowing that the general public's not going to go out and do your thermite test, and it's going to be kind of like, Piltdown Man, where they take a pig jaw and claim they found a new human, or the missing link. So just get ready. Unless I'm totally wrong about all this.
I know what you mean, Alex. I'm just saying that I think it's worthwhile to take a shot to try and get some facts out there to the public. Even some of those slipped through in the BBC effort. So I'm hopeful with this fellow Robert. And as I say, his questions were fair. And there was one question that he asked that I thought was a little off, and so I didn't go there, but I explained why. His question was, he's talking to Professor Thomas Eagar, which is good in a sense. I'd like to talk to Professor Eagar. I'd like to debate the issues publicly with Professor Eagar, particularly the 14 points.
But what did he ask you?
Yeah.
What did he specifically ask you about Eagar?
Oh, so what he was asking about was, he said, Eagar wants me to ask you, how in the world can you get all these explosives into the towers and Building 7 to bring them down? You know, give me an exact scenario. And my point was, well, look, we have now found residues in the dust that show this explosive material, this highly...
Hold on. We're coming back to the full audience. Hold on. Here we go. Okay, so Professor Jones is talking to the And we're going to go back to Professor Griffin here in just a moment. He's talking to the National Geographic guy, and the guy's saying, this Professor Eager wants to know exactly how many bombs were in the building and exactly how they wired up 7 and Tower 1 and 2. Well, he asked me that same question over the phone, and I said, well, Building 7 was a spook building, CIA, FBI. It was the emergency, and he just started laughing at me. I mean, that's an admitted fact, but it's real funny. You know, it's the same thing with the other buildings, and Professor Jones was saying, well, hey, we found the explosive residue. That's the issue here, not how did they commit the whole crime. We're saying there's evidence of a crime. That's why we needed a real investigation, not a cover-up. Professor Jones?
And that's right, Alex, and that's what I explained to him and on tape, and, you know, so I didn't give him an exact scenario. What I said was there's a lot we can learn from the hard physical evidence from the 9/11 dust and these residues that we're looking for that NFPA 921, the National Fire Code, requires at the scene of a fire where there's a crime, which certainly applies on 9/11. But then the next step, just like in CSI, the scientists do their work, but then you have other investigators with subpoena power, for instance, in a trial setting, so that you can ask questions from a lot of people and get the answers of exactly how it was.
Well, you've now gotten peer-reviewed journals on this, and I want to talk about that more, but going back to David Ray Griffin, who, by the way, has written, what, now 7 books on 9/11. Is that correct, Professor?
Yes.
And we'll talk about the latest book before you leave us here. But in the time we've got, you know, you've studied more psychology. You've studied more the human mind. You know, that's what your degree is more focused on. Studying this and being involved in the investigation, you know, we've got the Solicitor General's, you know, wife. Now the FBI admits that he made up the phone call. She didn't call him. I mean, how are they getting so many people to lie who've been caught in lies? And how do they get these TV presenters to knowingly go out and lie and say that Barry Jennings was in the building 3 hours when he was in there 20 minutes? I mean, how do they find people to do this?
Well, they pay them big salaries. A lot of my work was in the problem of evil. And this is, of course, a very old story. And it is, it still is shocking, even though, you know, I've studied it over the centuries, the really just horrible things people can do, and at the same time be kind of ordinary good family men. I mean, this was notorious about the Nazis, that, in fact, you know, the famous statement called The Banality of Evil, a study of the Nazis, that these were just ordinary family men, but get put in situations where their job depends on it, their career depends on it, their salary depends on it, and so on. And it is astounding what people will do. I was very disappointed on the BBC show. They at least dealt with this question of the steel that had been turned into Swiss cheese looking stuff. That they at least mentioned this, but they brought on one or two of those professors at Worcester Polytechnic Institute who had done that study. And, you know, at the time they said, well, they had no idea where the sulfur came from. And on the BBC show, one of them said, oh, well, I don't find that surprising. It could have just kind of mixed in, you know, heating up underground there. And,
yeah, they claim steel now corroded in a few weeks in the heat when it's got the, according to Jones and others, you know, the classic burn holes, that, you know, that happen from something really fast.
Yeah. Well, that's right, and you'd be talking about extremely high temperatures. Stephen, what temperatures would you need to oxidize steel?
Well, of course, steel can rust, but the point here is that there are very high temperatures and evidence to reduce that steel beam to the thickness. Very thin paper, thin with holes in it, plus the sulfur in the steel. And I caught that, too, the fellow from WPI saying, well, it could, see, the operative term there is could have been something like wallboard that could introduce sulfur. But you see, Wallboard has calcium and sulfur, and they're very tightly bound with oxygen as well, calcium sulfate. So, you know, it's not an issue here of just saying you could do it. You do experiments. That's what we do in science. That's why I did the experiment with Thermate.
All right, we're going to break and come back and talk about that experiment, and then from both of you, both Professor Jones and Professor Griffin, find out where you think this should go from here. Stay with us. We'll be right back. You know, in the 25 minutes or so of airtime we have left with both of you gentlemen today, I'd like for you both just to have a discussion and cover the issues that you think are most important. And, you know, we can go back over the science of Building 7 or Tower 1 or 2, or, you know, that's only a small part of it. You take all the evidence together, that's what's really strong. It's just seeing the other side, how they always lie, they always distort, they always twist knowingly. And I go back to what I was saying to David Ray Griffin, who's a top theologian, amongst other things, is, yeah, the nature of evil. I mean, do they rationalize to themselves? I think some of them do that, but others, you know, it's funny to them. I mean, I guess they get a thrill by working with the evil, by being patted on the head by the system. David Ray Griffin?
Well, you know, it's hard to know in all cases. I think some of it is what Sinclair Lewis pointed out long ago, that it's hard to get a man to understand something when his salary depends on his not understanding it. So I think in some cases, the people in the news media, you know, they have blinders on and they just look selectively at the evidence that seems to support the official story. And so they recognize, well, if they twist a little bit here and there, they're doing it for a larger truth they can rationalize. So I think there's quite a bit of that going on, rather than just, well, I know I'm doing something really horrible, but I need the money. So I think there's a lot of self-delusion that allows people to live with themselves.
Absolutely. Stephen Jones, I know you're a physicist, so you stick mainly to the science, but dealing with these people, I mean, your evidence, your research is conclusive. It fits in with other research and eyewitness reports. I mean, they're fitting square pegs and round holes. We're fitting round, you know, pegs and round holes. I mean, what has this whole journey been like for you, and where do you see 9/11 truth going now? And then I'll ask that same question to Griffin. Now that Obama's coming in, some are saying, oh my gosh, they think everything's fine, okay, now they're going to sleep, not understanding the very same military-industrial complex that clearly staged the attacks is still in control.
Let me respond to that particular issue of where 9/11 truth movement is going, Alex. I'm actually quite encouraged. See, the flip side to those basically official people missed, for example, that keep evading many of our questions, and then anyway, we could discuss that further. But I want to hit on and mention the people that are helping us, and these are, you know, there's really a very large, as you know, and you're a big part of it, this large public movement to get at the 9/11 truth. And in particular, I want to thank those people in New York City who saved World Trade Center dust, the 9/11 dust, on that day or shortly thereafter. We now have four samples that we're looking at in very actively and scrutinizing very carefully. And this dust is just revealing so much to us about what really happened that day. I have heard reports that the officials that gathered up the steel and shipped that over to Asia for melting also tried to gather up all the dust, but they did not succeed. A lot of people saved dust because it came into their apartments. It invaded their private space, and to their great credit, these New Yorkers saved some of that dust, often just for a souvenir. And we've had a dust in from Frank D'Alessio, who gathered a sample 10 minutes after the North Tower collapsed. That dust is full of these red chips, red on one side, gray on the other, that are very actively being studied now by three labs, and there are other labs anxious to study this material. And the reason I mention this, I had an email from David here just before your program. We would like to encourage others who have saved dust samples to provide a portion of the sample, retaining some for a further study. But this study is underway now. We're not waiting for an official government sanction or group to study this. We're studying it now. And we want to turn this into an international effort. The labs now are here in Indiana and New Hampshire, and we want to spread that to France and Australia and so on. There are people in France just very anxious to get their hands on a small 9/11 dust sample.
Sure.
They can look for the microspheres and the red-gray chips. And
so, Stephen, would you want them to send it directly to you, or how would they get it to you?
Okay, I wouldn't want it to come directly to me. Then we have problems with chain of custody. But if they want to write to me, or
you could give them the address where to send it.
Give them the address, right. Professor Babarian in France needs a sample desperately, for example, and we're trying to get that over to him. A sample needs to be about what would fit in your hand, you know, a cup-shaped hand.
Well, how do folks get in contact with you? Through the journal?
Yeah, if they go to the journal of 911studies.com and then up at the top click on Contact Us, they can write to either Kevin, or either of the three editors, Kevin Ryan, Frank Leggy, a PhD chemist in Australia, or myself. And
this is David Griffin. If anybody just wants to email me, if you know my email, I'm in contact with the same people in France, so
right.
I can give you the address too.
Right. So we're very anxious to turn this into an international, basically a public conducted investigation with the public being involved in providing.
Well, that is the good news. We also have Russian TV, French, Spanish, Japanese.
Right.
I mean, they're all doing real reports. That are showing, wow, there really is evidence of inside job. David Ray Griffin, looking at this historically, which you also look at, how do you see it unfolding now? Because at one level, I do see it losing some wind in the sails with Obama, but at another level, it's already gone international and actually seems to be building despite that. And you know, false flag terrorism has now entered the nomenclature. It's in movies. It's in culture. People are now looking for it. So it seems that the tool of government, of false flag or corporations, has been damaged to a certain extent. And some people say to me, well, why do you care? That was 7 years ago. The whole point is the entire post 9/11 world, this whole surveillance grid, has been built on that lie. So can you overall speak to the 9/11 truth saga itself and where you see it, you know, what it's done and where you see it going?
Yes, let me make three points. One is I think the election of Obama is a reason to gear up, not to slow down, because, you know, although we all tried, there was no realistic chance, as long as Bush was in power, that anything was going to happen in the United States. But with a new administration, a new attorney general, and so on, there is really a chance that we could have an investigation. Now, some people were motivated by revenge. They wanted Bush and Cheney and the gang to be punished, and that's understandable. But that's not the main thing. The main thing is to get the policies changed, as you've indicated. The so-called war on terror is set to continue. Obama thus far has talked about increasing our activities in Afghanistan,
yes.
And they're still talking as if they believe that Osama bin Laden is still alive, even though there's no evidence that he's been alive.
In fact, it appears they're reviving him.
I'm just writing a paper on that, and the evidence is very strong, and the evidence that he's been alive since 2001 is really extremely weak to non-existent.
Yeah.
So that's one point, that we should be increasing our activity, not decreasing it. Secondly, on this internationalization, I just returned from a tour in Japan, and there is increasing interest there. We had almost 500 people turn out in Tokyo for an all-day conference. And And then we have political leaders in Tokyo who have taken a public stand. And, of course, that adds credibility. And I've been working with Fujita and another person to bring about a group called Political Leaders for 9/11 Truth, which will be an international movement. We already, in fact, have a website, although if you go there, there's nothing on it there. But we're all ready to fill in the data. So that'll be a significant event. And then thirdly, hello, are you still there?
Yes, we're here.
Oh, okay. Thirdly, a new group has just formed called Lawyers for 9/11 Truth, which is an international group. And William Pepper and many other leading lawyers have already signed up, and it's moving along rather quickly. So the point is that whereas Stephen and Kevin and others have led the way to get us to this point where the science is so strong, that it's now time to turn it over to the political and legal realm. And that is now starting to happen.
All right. Well, let's look forward. First, you, Professor Griffin, and then quickly, and then get a response from Professor Jones. How do you see it unfolding in the future? Because it is continuing to grow. People understand how core an issue it is of government-sponsored terror, of provocateur actions. How do you see it unfolding? Do you see any justice to the perpetrators, or do you just see it becoming a public secret that this has been done, thus deterring some of the same institutions from pulling off similar events in the future?
Well, I would prefer a third alternative. As I say, I'm not interested in revenge, and I'm rather encouraged by Obama. I know some people aren't, but I am. First of all, he is very bright, and secondly, I believe he has also got a strong moral compass. And he also appreciates constitutional law, and he knows what has been done here. And so I think that he will be open to, he and his people will be open to evidence. So that's why I say I think we need to ramp things up and present the strongest evidence and take every route we can to get it, bring it to the attention of the Obama people, because I think there is the chance for a real investigation, but also he has shown that he has this virtue called forgiveness, that, you know, at least in our Christian tradition, it's been called a virtue, and he's willing to let bygones be bygones, and so I think if the most hopeful route would be a Truth and Reconciliation Commission, where the main thing would be to get the truth out, and therefore get the policies changed. And if these people, you know, they'll have their own punishment, just knowing what they did and having other people know what they did, that's a very secondary or tertiary matter from my point of view.
Professor Jones?
Yeah. I guess mine would be almost a fourth alternative, or maybe a modification of couple others, and that is, I think, from the people ourselves internationally now, as it's clear that there is an awakening going on. I think that there can be this grassroots movement coupled, frankly, with economic difficulties that are making people say, well, wait a minute, maybe I shouldn't trust the government and everything. I mean, the depression or recession, whatever you want to call it, that seems to be spreading internationally is inducing people to take a hard look at what has brought us to this state. And as that happens, through the internet and programs like yours, Alex, the truth about 9/11, I believe, will resonate with more people, and we'll have this grassroots movement demanding answers. And I think that, coupled with the science, will force politicians, even in our own Congress, to say, look, we need to take a look at this. I might say that our congressman here in Utah came over to my little apartment and spent an hour with me one-on-one discussing 9/11 issues and the research that I'd done, and he is very supportive of a 9/11 investigation. Jason Chaffetz, just newly elected, replaced Chris Cannon.
Wow, Jason Chaffetz.
Chaffetz, right. So, you know, I'm very encouraged that, and I know there are a lot of people locally and internationally that are...
Is that a federal congressman?
Yes.
How do you spell his name, Jason Chaffetz?
Chaffetz, Chaffetz.
All right, I want to get him on.
Yeah, you should. Well, okay. Good luck. He's just new into the Congress. His first round, you know, in Congress.
So he is a 9/11 truther, or he's investigating it?
He supports an investigation, and he wanted to talk to me, and so we did for an hour in my apartment.
Well, that's fabulous. That is fabulous news. Okay,
Go ahead.
No. I mean, you were saying the people are.
People are leaning on their congressman to do an investigation. I'm hoping that various conditions cause people to wake up, that they will continue to speak out to their congressman, not let that down, but now, you know, keep the pressure up on the congressman and internationally too, so that, as David said, we can get the political arm and the legal arm active in pursuing justice and truth.
David Ray Griffin, isn't there also a facet to this that the people have learned that when the mainstream media is attacking a 9/11 truth movement or a JFK investigation movement or any other movement, that generally the mainstream media is so discredited now that it almost makes people then go investigate what we're saying? I mean, I found, as bad as the History Channel piece was, that it seemed to backfire on them and got more people to actually look at the evidence.
Well, yeah, the BBC show had the same effect. Building on what Stephen was saying there, I think that it will take an international movement, and that's why I'm encouraged that Japan, it looks like now, will be putting pressure on Washington and saying, look, we lost some people in the towers, and... We've only had the assurance of President Bush that these were Muslims who did this. Give us the proof. I understand from Annie McCone, she was here recently from the UK, the leader of the London movement, and she says that whereas some people in the United States had said things were dying down a little bit here because the Bush-Cheney people would be leaving office, that in Europe it's actually getting much more interest.
And, well, let me say, it's only getting bigger from what I see in New York this last year and other places. I'm just saying, some fear that, you know, it's a Bush-centric, all about Bush, whereas the very same military-industrial complex that did this is still there. And I think that's the point that has to be made. But we'll see what Barack Obama does. I mean, I have to tell you, appointing Hillary Clinton or moving to put her in Secretary of State and a bunch of other stuff, I think we're going to see betrayal from him. But we can hope for the best. Final segment with David Ray Griffin. All right, final segments with Professor Stephen Jones, who I want to get back on separately by himself, and David Ray Griffin by himself in the future. But I thought it'd be neat to have both of them on together today. And we appreciate them joining us. Before I go back to them, PrisonPlanet.tv, all of my films in super high quality, the last hour of the show every day live with the document cam, the video feeds, extras from films that aren't even on the DVDs, my in-studio reports, just so much is at PrisonPlanet.tv, and your membership there funds this operation and what we do here, $5.95 a month. But right now you can get 5 months free when you sign up for a year. You basically pay for... 6.7 months, and you get 5.3 months free at PrisonPlanet.tv right now through December. You can sign up for that right now and pay for 6 months. You basically get 5-plus months free. PrisonPlanet.tv. Check it out, folks. I know you know about the New World Order, but to your friends and family, you can actually give them your passcode as a present. I don't care. Use it for yourself. Give it to them. I want to get the word out. So that's my little present to you. Going to David Ray Griffin, tell us about your latest book, your seventh book on 9/11.
Well, that's the New Pearl Harbor Revisited, and it's some people have thought it's an update or a revision of the New Pearl Harbor, but not at all. It's a totally new book. The idea is that if a journalist or a politician were going to try to dig into this who knew nothing about it before, it's kind of overwhelming to think, you know, they might have to read 20 journal articles and three or seven books or so. So the idea was to try to get all the most essential information in two books. So it's now a two-volume set, The New Pearl Harbor and The New Pearl Harbor Revisited.
And by the way, when you read these books or you go over the 500 smoking guns of 9/11 online, it is mind-blowing. I mean, just how obvious it is, David.
Well, that's right. And I've always argued the main thing is a cumulative case that no matter which part of the story you look at, you find outright contradictions and lies and just assertions that, from a scientific point of view,
well, that's it.
Cannot be true.
Well, I mean, that's it. It is that it's the covering up. I mean, the other evidence is strong, too. But the covering up, the sneakiness, the lying, the acting so suspicious, I mean, that is really powerful. And in closing, Stephen Jones, your take on that. I mean, is that strong evidence, the way they lie and cover up?
Well, sure. And, of course, the steel was cut up and shipped out of this country over the protests of many scientists and engineers who felt that this data, this evidence, was crucial in solving and understanding what happened on 9/11. So, and again, now the dust we have is still extant. And I just wanted to reemphasize, as I'm working with David and others, Kevin Ryan and others, trying to understand and get samples of this 9/11 dust out to scientists worldwide so that we can really corroborate, confirm the results that we're getting.
The findings.
The residues of explosives, so that people can hear about it from scientists. I believe that there's a lot of trust still in scientists as opposed to politicians, I guess I could say it that way. And I believe if we can get this out to the public and keep that public discussion going based on hard evidence, that we'll make tremendous strides in the next year.
Absolutely. And folks can get in contact and read your papers. Tell them the best place for that.
Just go to journalof911studies.com. And our other papers that are published in the more established journals are listed right up at the top on the homepage.
All right. And then, of course, for David Ray Griffin's book and other materials, you can just Google David Ray Griffin, The New Pearl Harbor Revisited. Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for joining us today, and have a great Thanksgiving coming up next week.
Thanks so much. My pleasure, Alex.
Thank you both, gentlemen. All right, that's it for this transmission. There go our guests, great men. Rebroadcast starts now at Infowars.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN.
Our other papers that are published in the more established journals are listed right up at the top on the homepage.
All right. And then, of course, for David Ray Griffin's book and other materials, you can just Google David Ray Griffin, The New Pearl Harbor Revisited. Gentlemen, I want to thank you both for joining us today, and have a great Thanksgiving coming up next week.
Thanks so much. My pleasure, Alex.
Thank you both, gentlemen. All right. That's it for this transmission. There go our guests, great men. Rebroadcast starts now at Infowars.com.